Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome to the show a great friend of mine, actor, one of, best manager in wrestling today, as well as the leader of Cult Fiction, Billy Graham. What's going on, Billy?
What's up, man? Wow, what an introduction that is, man. Best manager today?
The only one I would say so.
Thanks, man. The only, you know, it's not a point of ego or anything like that. There's a lot of managers in the business I like a lot. I like what they do. I would definitely, you know, give props to all my brothers and sisters that include, you know, Dewey Donovan, Chrissy Rivera, you know, Callie Pierce, people like that. But, you know, I won't dispute if you want to say I'm good, but there's only one guy I say is better than me, and he is, and that's Robbie Moreno, man. I got to give him props, man, because.
Of course,
Robbie Moreno was a huge influence on me as far as, you know, keeping me motivated to give it a go again and everything like that. I mean, to me, he's one of the most underrated talents in the business. Now, one difference being, of course, that he is a wrestler and I'm not. And Robbie's actually a much better wrestler than anybody seems to realize he is. I mean, Ruckus will tell you. I mean, Ruckus told me outright one day. He said, Billy, man, he's the best. He's a better wrestler than me, you know, and that's saying a lot because Ruckus can wrestle, and that's the fact. Always props out to the Blackout from Billy Graham because they were people that really, like I said, influenced me, motivated me, and I love them all, man. Like everybody that's ever been a part of that crew, I mean that respect is real. I love Nell Sabian, Black G's, man. Shout out to him. Love Ruckus, man. Love Robbie. Love Joker, man. Is a fucking. That's a fucking warrior, a man's man, a guy that's fucking got mad fucking respect anywhere he goes. And of course, Kingston and Chrissy, you know, like the whole – hell, even Larry Legend, man, when he was their ring announcer, I guess qualifies as a blackout.
Yeah.
So, but best announcer in the business right now, too, in the ring is Larry the Legend. But, leader of Cult Fiction, that's me. Crazy. We can talk about all kinds of stuff tonight, Jabin, waiting. Last time we talked, if I can spit this out real quick. I mean, last time we talked, it was on a show. We're talking about our dear departed friend and comrade and brother and is J.C. Bailey and sadly, and then this kind of a segue, if you want to hear some real skinny, deep shit from Billy Graham tonight, is that sadly last night J.C.'s mother has passed away. And, you know,
we lost
for words, and if I'm making a mistake, you know, I've been getting a lot of calls, a lot of letters, and people asking me what happened, was she sick, this, that, and from the best I've been able to tell, and I did not get a chance to speak to Joe today. I'm going to call him tomorrow because I know he's being besieged, but from what I understand, you know, people do die of a broken heart. I've known that for a long time, and it's really what I'm being told. The answer I'm being given is that she's passed away because she mourned the loss of her son until it killed her. And I just say, man, like JC, man, your mother's with you, and you'll always be with us, and you'll see our promo for CZW this month. You know, like. It's not a point of exploitation or trying to capitalize on a tragedy or anything like that. But there's also comes a point, you know, when where's your integrity factor lie? You know, where's your responsibility to the fans? I mean, indie wrestling, man, we're a really tight knit group. I mean, the fans are our friends, and we all know each other. It's very family like atmosphere, and so you'll see that this month, you know, we did choose to like. Talk about JC in our promo before Cage of Death and stuff, and I can only say this is because I know it's what he would have wanted. You know, I said it 2 months ago at the show in the middle of the ring. It was half a work, half a truth. I like said, you know, that so much of what we were doing was centered around JC's comeback this year, and I can talk a little bit more about where that might have went. I mean, JC basically had become the heart of Cult Fiction. You know, if I'm the brains and I'm the motivator, and you have, you know, brain damage, the right arm of Cult Fiction from the day it was conceived, you know, Toby Klein, the legs, you know, same with the range, you know, and Masada's sure come in and become a, you know, the other arm, and certainly my buddy 13 there, my little doggy, as I like to call him, has definitely shown that he's the guts. And so you can imagine anybody, you know, having its heart ripped out. It's indescribable, you know, what we still go through now. I mean, it's just really, really hard. But I know that my brother would have wanted us to, you know, we can't ignore his passing and we can't minimize his existence by acting like, hey, just, you know, back to business, like it, you know, like it never happened, because it just, he was too huge a part of what we were doing for the show. He was too huge a part to all of us behind the scenes, and it's just not your everyday thing. And that just, I mean, fuck, everybody's asking me all this shit, so I'm gonna just roll on it for a minute, Jay, and then I'll let you ask away, man. It's just that, yeah,
right,
for
right.
me, man, I mean, I've had, and this is science fiction from an old man, because, you know, obviously death is a daily part of our existence. Like the man said, they're dying every day in alphabetical order from Anthony Aardvark to Zelda Zipowitz, and you can read about it in any paper in the country. But, you know, it's like a status quo, man, of who you know, and, I, you know, you're in an entertainment business, a long life like me, lived all over the place. I mean, I know a lot more people than maybe your average Joe next door. But for me, starting with the death of Corey Haim, who was a dear friend and a roommate of my collaborator, partner, brother, friend, savior, Robert Lucas, whose home I am now living in Stamford, Connecticut, my business partner, my brother, my friend. Corey had lived with him for a time. We're very close. I got to know Corey, was not as close as some of my other friends, but, you know, we certainly, you know, the reason he was steered to me was to talk about his problems and his issues, and we had made a bond. And then, of course, my partner and I with Legend Keeper, which hopefully we'll maybe talk a little bit more about that and for you, but Brooke McCarter and Billy Wirth, who were two of Corey's castmates from The Lost Boys, are two people that my partner Rob Lucas and I are personal managers for, among 50 other people. So Corey's death was very, very, I work and deal with and interact with and am friends with and in business with many people very close to Corey. And when he passed, it just set off a chain where, from him passing 5 months later to John's son, Zandig's son, Cody, and the day before JC, at that point, that was 20 deaths in my immediate extended family in 5 months, which is an average of one a week for 5 months. And I had a little break here till last night in that, strangely. And then this is, of course, all on the top of me, you know, a divorce, losing my home of 10 years, the longest place I've ever lived anywhere. And this all came complete within the last 4 weeks, basically, that I finally did have to move away. And I'm now living separately from my daughter, which is fucking killing me. And she's still going to, you know, she's coming back and forth and all that. But it's just a real, really, really, really hard change. And here I find, luckily, like I said, my brother, my partner, Rob Lucas, my friend, I mean, you know, caring enough, kind enough, and able to, you know, have me move up here to his beautiful home in Stamford, Connecticut. So here I am in Stamford. I'm in Vince McMahon's backyard, and that's where I'm at right now. So it was a weird trip for me this weekend, you know, for the first time not coming from my home in the mountains of Pennsylvania, the original Cult Fiction compound, not with my daughter in tow. And props out to purely sexy Georgie Hayes there, our bro that went all the way from Staten Island all the way up here to Stamford, picked me up and make sure I got down there to the combat zone on the weekend. And
Georgie's awesome.
That's part of what's going on with Billy. So how's that for true confessions, you know?
Right, definitely.
Like fucking
you know,
hard,
I could
people.
Say,
fucking hard, people.
Yeah, well, what I could say, and, you know, I've seen other people's, you know, downfalls and this and that. I've lost, you know, several animals in this year, as well as friends and, you know, people in wrestling business that I respected the shit out of, and seen all these other people with, you know, terrible, terrible tragedies come upon them. I could say honestly, and yeah, I think you'll probably agree with me, Billy, that 2010 sucks.
2010, to me, should not be written as 2010. It's the calendar in our history, for me personally, should go 2009, and then there'll be something in between 2009, 2011, which is the year, this should be not called 2010. It should be the year that death fucking, like, was out of fucking control and needed to check his fucking pussy ass, okay? The Grim Reaper is a pussy, okay? Like, a pussy. Death is a coward, a sneak, doesn't play by any rules, and I say fuck death. And I quite honestly, it's not just hollow words. I mean, I'd tell you exactly how old I am, but then I'd have to kill you people. I won't do that, because especially, like, a lot of chicks are, like, really prejudiced against me.
I won't tell them either. Don't worry.
And you know, I only let a chick know how old I am when she proves she doesn't fucking care. And that's my right. But as long as I've been on this earth, you know, the Grim Reaper is always a piece of shit. But, I mean, I'm sitting here, and all the adversity and all the shit and all the many lives and rebirths I've had, I mean, some of these deaths, I mean, Corey, who was just fighting so hard to get his shit together, you know, the battle that Trent was going through, I mean, two of my nephews, Murder and the Rest, my biggest fan in the world, the biggest cult fiction fan in the world, young Daniel Sines from Texas, man, he, for 5 years, battling leukemia, should have passed long already. This is actually maybe something positive to think of. I became aware of Daniel through his dad on Facebook, and he was 14 when I made contact with him this summer, and he was just in this cancer ward in Texas. He had been through so many things, and he, when I called him, I talked to his dad first, and I said, don't tell him who it is, put him on the line. And I said, Daniel, and he's like, hey. I go, what are you doing? He goes, it's nothing. I go, what's up? He's like, I'm watching TV. I'm like, yeah. I go, you don't even know who this is, do you? He goes, oh, it's Juan. I was like, no, it's not fucking Juan, man. Come on. And he's like, George. And I'm like, no, man. Come on, dude. Think. Who are you talking to? And he went, oh, my God. You're Billy Graham. And I was like, I couldn't even believe he would recognize my voice that quick. Very humbling, flat, like, you know, just like make you speechless like it is now. And he started screaming to all the other kids in the cancer ward, you know, like, oh, my God, you don't understand. Billy Graham, he's my hero. He's on the phone. And he just told me how his favorite wrestlers were Brain Damage and J.C. Bailey and Nick Gage, and I was his other favorite, and Cult Fiction were his favorites. And you know, he said to me, he said, listen, and his, I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole list of really, really horrible physical things that he faced and he overcame. And he was telling me funny stories about all these things. And he said, yeah, listen, he goes, when I get better. And he didn't say if I get better. He said, when I get better, he goes, and I get to be 18, because he was a couple weeks shy of his 15th birthday at this point, and living with that all those years when most don't make it 6 months. And he said to me, when I get better, he goes, and I turn 18, I'm going to become a deathmatch wrestler. So I gave him the obligatory, well, you know, you're not retarded. You really probably could think of something better to do with your life than this stupid shit. And, you know, that whole, like, you know, believe it or not, sometimes Charlie Manson here, I mean, when it comes to kids and young people, man, like, away from performance and away from this, you know, whatever the fuck I'm supposed to be, this internet personality, this, you know, like, internet warrior and Facebook warrior and kook jumping around in the combat zone and making monster movies and all this other shit. I mean, when it comes to kids, you know, I'm really responsible and hell-bent on being a positive influence and being honest. And so I gave him that obligatory speech and said, you know, you really don't want to do that. However, if you do persist in this dumb notion that you're having, I said, let me tell you something. I said, I do know people that will be willing to help you if you persist in this silly idea that you're having. I said, let me tell you something else. I said, everything that you've been through, all the chemo, all the surgery, the sickness, you know, all these things, I said, bro, let me tell you something. I already know you're tough enough to do what we do, because barbed wire and thumbtacks and light tubes and fire and shit like that are not shit. I said, you've went through more than anything that any, you know, TOD champion has ever went through. You know, and that that's no disrespect to Nikki, man. I mean, I'm just saying, that was one moment, you know, and this young man, like, was having those moments every other week. And you know, that's constantly. And I said, but, you know, I know you're tough enough. And he was like, for real? And I was like, yeah. And I go, and I'll tell you something else. I said, you get to be 18 and you still do that, you already got a manager. And he screamed to everyone, oh, my God, Billy Graham's going to be my manager. And so I had started his birthday was going to be in August. I was out doing Famous Monsters convention in July when I was not at CZW after I had quote unquote quit the company, I had started gathering like 8x10s and toys and all these things from like all the celebrities I know and all this other stuff. I wanted to make this big birthday for him, and he passed away a week later. And so that was just, that was devastating, And then, right before that was Trent, and two of my nephews on the res were shot. And it's just like, I don't know, but really death can suck my dick. That's like, I wish.
Yeah.
And I tell you what I was leading up to earlier as I babble was that at this advanced state and all the shit I keep surviving, and you go, why me? And it's like if I could trade places with any one of those guys right now, man, at my advanced elderly state, I would gladly do it to give them, some more fucking time.
Wow.
I think that they're just, gone too soon. And, that's such a final, statement, and why couldn't that kid have experienced, what I got to experience, like he loved wrestling.
I'll tell you though, in this kid's last moments, one of the happiest moments in, everything that he had to go through was hearing your voice, I think that speaks volumes for why you are here,
Oh, man. Well, thanks, bro. I mean, fuck. But, shit. Thank you, sir. But I'm humbled. His father's told me the same thing, I just wish I could have done more. I wish I was not Billy Graham. I wish I was Triple H so I could have set him on a plane and flew him out to CZW, and brought him out to the ring with me, and had him be my side guy or something. That's what I would have done if I was able, if the means were there, it would have happened, I really also would like to talk a little bit more about the situation with JC because, it's been a couple months, 3 months, it seems like 3 years and 3 days and 3 minutes and I can't explain it. 300 years, but it's back for that shit. But anyway, I live in a no smoking zone now, people. So the leader of Cult Fiction must obey the fucking rules. But
that sucks.
It's especially because the wind up here in Stanford right now is fucking cold, man. But anyway,
Wait a minute. Doesn't Billy Graham say fuck the rules?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not to his partner, benefactor, brother, who owns and rules this house, this roof that I'm living over. And I don't blame him because this place, all the bad, like I said about my business partner, Rob, my brother earlier, I had definitely friends saying, hey, come crash on my couch, And it's not the best launch to, a life change, And it's really hard being up here away from, hardly anybody I know or anything like that, but it's beautiful here and it's just amazing, and we're, we've got a lot of good things going on with our company, with film stuff. We're going to talk about that some more in a minute, I hope, but
I gotta snatch this interview back a little bit, homie.
Okay.
I did want to
say something about the whole thing with JC's death and stuff
which
is this, that we all know me as far as when it comes to certain message boards and stuff and certain haters and people that have no lives and just live their life to, and once again, the statement about that is, I'm not the biggest NASCAR fan. I don't sit on fucking NASCAR boards fucking shit on Dale Earnhardt and how, big deal. Who cares if he can drive a car in the circle? I fucking burning gas. What a dummy, it's not my thing. So to each their own, man, and so, I'll never get people that spend their whole life obsessed with ripping apart the things that me and my friends, my friends and I, are involved in, and I'll never understand that. But, when JC passed and these motherfuckers all started chiming in with the drugs and all this other shit, they were not aware, as I was, of what was actually going on in JC's life at the time. So I just wanted to spit that out right now and just tell the truth, okay? JC was really moved and affected by Trent's passing. They were really good friends. And, you know, he came to me at Tournament of Death and said, look, man, you know I've been doing good. And JC had been. He'd drink a couple beers, whatever. I'm not going to, you know. But really, as far as, like, drugs and stuff like that, he really had his shit under control for months. And he said to me, Billy, he goes, I've been thinking about doing something. He goes, because I don't want to disrespect Mike, and I want to, as who you know as Trent, and you know, I just want to make sure everything's cool. And I said, what's up, bro? You know, and he said, well, I just to make sure I'm perfectly cool, like I know I'm doing good. He goes, but I really want to be better completely. He said, I've been thinking about checking myself into rehab just to follow through and really get myself good. And I'm like, well, fuck, bro. Strength, man, like, good idea, like, do it. And he said, well, no, like, he goes, I'm asking you if it's okay. I'm like, why are you asking? He goes, because, bro, like, we're in the middle of this big feud and Cult Fiction and, you know, CZW, and he's like, I'm not going to do it if it's going to fuck shit up for all of us. And I was like, look, man, like, there's real and there's real, man. I'm glad that you care about all of us. I was like, but fuck that, like, you hurt your back, man, you know. And we all know that we were all told JC wasn't there because he hurt his back, and that was my spin, I mean, because it wasn't really anybody's fucking business, you know what I mean? And you know, especially with all the hate out there and everything. So at the time of JC's passing, he had just completed 60 days and was clean as a motherfucker and you know, had come out, and there's just a lot of things that are personal that but just everything going so right those last 2 days for him. And as of last week, I believe a friend of mine, oh, look at this, one of Billy's angels just walked into the new compound here, and she looks gorgeous. She's in a leopard print thing, and she's smiling at me, and she's walking toward me, and she's got leather boots and stockings and stuff on. Give me a second. Oh, hold on. Sit down here and join me for a minute while I talk. There's one right past where you walked in there. And yeah, come over here and wow. Well, yeah, that's okay. Wow, you look really hot, man. Anyway, sorry guys. Anyhow, what I was gonna say is that, you know, the people jumping on that bandwagon. Well, 3 weeks ago, and I've been in the middle of the move and everything, I'd spoken to Joe, and the toxicology reports had come in, and absolutely the only thing JC had in his system was like a guy who drank two beers and the equivalent of one pain pill, which was his back was hurt. Okay, that's why I went there with this story. And so it's ruled unequivocally that drugs and alcohol had nothing to do with my friend's death, which is exactly what I surmised. Now, the next part of that, and then I'll get off of it, was that, you know, right away everybody throwing hardcore under the bus. She's in the bathroom. Hardcore under the bus, and then going right to the chair shots and things like that, you know, I'm not saying that getting hit in the head with a steel chair is good for you. It's not fiber. It's not vitamins. But certainly, you know, there's a reason why, you know, everybody that's been taking all these chair shots is not walking around dead. And it's because it has to do with physics, the actual thickness of the chair, wind resistance to swinging, the harder you swing it. I'm not going to give away every thought. If you're an intelligent person, you can use your brain and start to figure it out why it's not killing you when you get hit with one. You know, now, like I said, not good for you, but the reason I didn't like the way that everybody started to throw hardcore under the bus, the simple fact remains that while everybody's pointing a finger at that, you know, just your common straight wrestling match, that even what you're used to seeing in the WWE, TNA, I don't care if it's 1960, you know, Dick the Bruiser, you know, what's going on is that, you know, professional wrestling is a risk. Everybody knows the risks. Everybody voluntarily takes the risks. And anybody that goes anywhere is well aware of what they're doing to themselves. It's not good for the body. Guess what, people? News for you. It all fucking hurts, okay? It all is damaging to the body. And do we not live in a free society? Do we not have the right to make free choices? Do we not have the right to take risks as free people? And do we not have the right to be retarded, if that's what someone wants to call us? And so to me, you know, okay, a steel chair shot is one thing that's obvious, but what people aren't seeing is, or making a big deal out of, is that, look, that's the business, that every time you go down on your back and maybe you snap a little too hard and your head hits that ring or elsewhere, like the concrete floor, that's, to me, where there's, real damage coming in your most basic shit. And I kind of think it's sad, but it's ironic that my friend Thumbtack Jack, who I love very dearly, that he, quit hardcore wrestling and death matches, and is he not now with a broken back and out of the business? And it didn't come from doing a steel chair shot to the head. So, just
right.
Trying to come up with a simple solution of these things does not work. And okay, now check it out. Now I've got that out of my system, and I'm going to let you ask me questions, because this lovely lady is just really, really enticing. I have to go. Johnny's out there, and he said, "Well, come back, because I want you to hang out with me when I'm talking to my friends on the radio here." I was thinking we'd maybe have some fun, make them use their imaginations. Okay. In other words, if you want to rate me while I'm on this fucking radio show, it's going to really boost their ratings. All right. So you have.
Yeah. Why not? Right.
Okay. She'll be back after her cigarette. Hi, Johnny. That's Elise. Elise, Johnny. He's out there. Okay. Hi.
25 feet from the building. All right.
Yeah.
25
yeah.
feet from the building.
Damn.
So yeah.
I'm telling you, everybody. I wish you could see her at home, man. I really do, man. Because yowza.
Well,
beating Billy Graham.
Good luck to you. And
I don't need luck with
you. You know, no, it's already there. So, I wanted to get into, your whole start in the wrestling business. What actually, got you rolling in the wrestling business, where it all began for Billy Graham.
Awesome. Okay, now you can really start doing the math, people, and I'll fuck myself up. I shouldn't tell you. I mentioned Dick the Bruiser earlier, and the first wrestling show I attended, believe it or not, was in 1964. And it's starting to come out, right? Listen, Dick the Bruiser and Bulldog Brower is what I remember. And then throughout in 1967, I was going to Market Street Arena, and so my grandparents lived in Philadelphia. I'd come there for the summer from out of state. I lived in Ohio at the time, and I used to go to all the WWWF television tapings for Channel 48.
When there was another W.
Yeah, at the Market Street Arena down there, I saw Ox Baker when he was the Arkansas Ox. His first WWWF match, teamed up with Armand Hussein in a handicap match versus Gorilla Monsoon. The whole feud between Bruno Sammartino and mob enforcer two-ton Tony Galento. Taru Tanaka's first WWWF match. People like the Batman with two T's that you no doubt have never heard of, and all kinds of crazy characters. Then I had a little lapse, and then from like 71 into 73, I was living in Reading, Pennsylvania, and I used to go to the Hamburg Fieldhouse for all the TV tapings then that they were doing then. And so, and then that just kind of led, once I got to be, the mid to late 70s, I kind of bagged wrestling, like I got too cool and too smart and too old for it, and way back then. And, it's not really. I turn it on once in a while, like when I was changing the channels. But then, ironically, I was on a trip out west in 1983, driving back home across the country, and me and my buddy needed somewhere to take a break and stop. So I called a friend of mine in Southern Virginia and said, "Hey, man, I'm coming in. I'm in Missouri now, and I need a place to crash. Is it cool?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, but if you're coming to my house, man, dude, listen. Tomorrow night we're going to this big wrestling card, the biggest wrestling card that's ever been thrown. Like, if you're staying at my house, you got to go with us." And I'm like, "Oh, man, dude, I've been driving from Denver, you know what I mean? Come on." He's like, "No, you don't understand. This is going to be the biggest thing that there's ever been in wrestling. You'll love it." He's like, Greg Valentine's on the show. He's like, "I know you always like Johnny." And I'm like, "I like Greg, too." And he's like, "Well, no." Well, I pull into my friend's house in Virginia. The next day, he takes me to this event. It was Starrcade. And, Piper versus Greg Valentine. Enough said, let alone the whole rest of the spectacle. And from that night, I walked back in, I was hooked again. I couldn't help it. So it was right pre, the Hogan era winning the belt, by like a year and a half or something like that. And I just got completely obsessed again. And then by the time, he's running wild, brother, and all that other stuff. By that time, I was just loving it so much, and I started, because I lived in the Philly area in South Jersey, I started meeting people that were in the business, and I was so thinking that, man, with what I've already done as a musician on stage and what kind of kook I am and with my talking ability, you know, I got to get into this. And it was so hard back then to get in. I mean, it wasn't like now there's a wrestling school on every fucking corner. They're not all good. Most of them aren't. Not all of them can be the Combat Zone Wrestling Academy, which is the best wrestling school in the area, I might add.
Right.
So it was really hard back then, and my best friend, Big Mike, who's been to some of the shows recently, you guys might have met him, of 30-some years, his brother, Tommy, was best friends with a guy named Scott Levy. And I remember pulling into Gold's Gym in Cherry Hill one day with my friend. There was a car detailing operation. They were running in the back, and his brother says, "What are you guys doing tomorrow night?" I'm like, "Oh, we're going to the WWF at the Spectrum. We always go." And this kid washing the car looks up and says, "Yeah, you want to see some real fucking wrestling? You need to come to the Monster Factory next week." Da da da. Well, that was Scott Levy, and he wasn't done his training yet. And of course, you guys all know him as Raven, and was inspiring. And then, I got to be friends with people like Brian Knobbs, and he was like, "No, dude, you don't want to get in this business. It's bad." Like, it was just a closed door policy. Like, you really, if you didn't already know somebody in, especially for the path of a manager, which, you know, the more you learn about the business, I'll elaborate more on that in a minute, but like the real names, you know, and the real managers in the business, you know, there's a line, a blur between fiction and reality that's very mucky and murky when it comes to managers, because most of the great managers in the business actually have done more than just come out there and portray a character that's a manager. A lot of times there are real things like making sure your guys' schedules are right, feeding them, doing this, doing that, like, you know, and you know, with all the backstage politics and stuff like that. So the real managers in the business really are a lot more involved than just, you know, like people think, "Oh, I could do that. I could put on a suit and walk out there with a briefcase and make everybody." It's much more complex than that. There's more to it, and it's certainly in a day and age when managers have basically become the most endangered species in the business and are all but extinct. And that's one of the reasons I'm proud to be one to take up the flag for, you know, because like the Grand Wizard meant a lot to me, man. Bobby Heenan meant a lot to me, you know.
Right.
Jim Cornette did as a character. I don't really know what to say about Mr. Cornette in real life these days, you know. But it's crazy. What happened finally was, I decided, you know, my musical career was going great, early 90s. I had record label offers, all this other shit. And then someone finally gave me a call. And don't forget Billy, please. Don't forget Billy. And it's really hard to talk on the radio when you can not hear. They're ignoring me anyway. Yeah, don't forget Billy, please. I want a shot. Yeah, vodka. Yeah. Sorry, we're having a. Yeah. Anyway, so what I was saying is that I know. I'm back on track, guys. So I apologize. I need some liquor. Drink to all the brothers and sisters that are passed. But anyway, the deal is that I made contact with someone, and someone made contact with me from the Monster Factory, and that's in 1992, where I went and got my first formal training in the wrestling business. 2 months later. I suffered a brain hemorrhage, every muscle and ligament in my neck torn, multiple concussions, and suffer from post-concussive syndrome to this day from that little incident. Yeah, well, I say brain hemorrhage. It was actually technically a slight cerebral edema, which means my brain was only bleeding a little bit, and that was in 1992. But that was from
now,
a reckless...
Was that a specific incident, or was that like a lot
of
punishment?
It was from someone who was a bully and a lout, and that person is, ready for this, Bombshell Wrestling World. That man's name is Glenn Ruth, which you all know better as Headbanger Thrasher. That's the guy who almost killed me. And basically what was happening was, I was doing all this kind of crazy shit and doing really good at it, but I was having trouble on my straight back bumps because of how I don't have a back. I turn sideways, I disappear, you know, and I got this big fucking alien.
Right.
So, you know, he hits me, he knocks me down, my back of my skull hits the fucking ring, okay? I get up, I'm determined not to show weakness, you know, he shoves me, knocks me over again, my head hits the ring again. Fourth time, I puke, I stand up, I swallow it because I'm not going to show any weakness to these fucking guys, right? Well, basically, he decided to do this to me like about 25 times in a row, and the last time he did it, he pulled a schoolyard prank where he had another worker come up behind me, squat on all fours, and then shove me over him, and that was when I lost consciousness. And, you know, so, yeah, once I got to the hospital, my brain was bleeding, and so... Well, everybody thinks I'm, you know, Mr. No Talent Jackass. This is to you guys. Cheers. You know, that was in 1992, you know, and that was when I was starting at a late age to begin with. And so that's some of what I went through to get there. And so I did some more training with some other people. I worked a couple really bad shows in 1993 to 1995, like, because the indie scene was horrible. It was a joke. It was like something that you just wouldn't even want it to me be seen on what was running. And in 1995, I did something I had never done before, and I quit something that I had a passion for. And that was really hard. And then right around the year 2000, 5 years later, I started hearing about these two companies, Combat Zone Wrestling and IWA Mid-South, and I started getting some tapes, and I started seeing what they were doing, and I was going, who are these motherfuckers, man? You know, like, these guys are fucking cool. This is crazy. And I left out. I did used to go to all the ECW shows for quite some time in the 90s at the arena there, and many times... Same rituals that the fans go through that people make fun of us now for, you know, that we party with our fans and stuff like that, burn a couple, whatever, try to have a beer. I mean, I was there doing that with a lot of guys with names that, you know, they're all big WWE legends now and stuff like that. And I won't tell all their names, but you look at the roster of ECW in the mid-90s, and pretty much almost every one of those fuckers, if they smoke, I smoked with them. If they drank, I drank with them. The one person I will mention, because nobody can object, absolutely partied with Chris Benoit and his wife. And they were great people. They were wonderful people, and don't get me started on all that. I don't like people being convicted without due process or a jury or anything like that. So,
being you hit that topic, I already know it's in your bank, and I'd like the world to hear your views on what you think happened.
Okay, well, I can't look. I'm known as a conspiracy nut and fanatic to start with in my life. Okay, but understand something, human. Conspiracy is human nature, okay? If two people get together, there's a conspiracy happening. I don't give a fuck what it's right now. Conspiracy over, are we going to, like, really clean the dishes, or are we going to throw them in the, you know. Any two people get together, conspiracy is human nature. So I find the term conspiracy nut to be extremely disturbing, because I think you're nuts if you don't think there's a fucking conspiracy going on, okay, because it's human nature. So as far as Chris goes, number one, I can't stand, you know, the fact that we're supposed to think this man never existed, and when he was one of the greatest performers in the history of the business. And on all accounts, up till this murky area where nobody really knows what happened, was someone who was known as a great human being and a person that was good to people. Now, this is what I do know, and I do have some field of expertise in, and we'll get into this other life of mine some other time. But believe it or not, folks, here's another bombshell for the whole fucking world. Like, yes, Half-Breed Billy Graham is a graduate of a law enforcement program and was involved in Native law enforcement for quite some time. And I know a lot about basic procedure, and most of you should, from the world that we live in these days. And this is what this is, okay? It's not police procedure in any way. A crime happens. Triple homicide, possibly a double homicide, suicide. There's three dead bodies. Okay, one of them's a little kid. There's a process, you know, that you go through. A police officer follows, investigators follow, detectives follow. It's just common on everything that's done, every case that happens, every murder that's committed, every body that's found, you go through a due process. And I didn't see that. What I saw was bodies found and the media putting out a story. This is what happened. Now, what I do know is there was a major, obvious, huge federal steroid investigation that was going on. Doctors all over the country involved, wrestlers named all over the place, as well as other side characters. And it's just, it's a fact, and anybody that digs in this can know this, that Chris Benoit was a guy that was going to get subpoenaed, and he was pegged, and he knew a lot. And I think that they were definitely going to squeeze him, you know, to give everybody up and use his family as a means of leverage against it. You know, other glaring, weird shit. It's a well-known fact that Chris and Nancy were atheists, but somehow when this man killed his family, he put Bibles by their bodies. I'm an engine man, okay? I believe in our sacred shit. I don't believe in the Bible. If I kill you, which I'm not going to do unless you're a fucking piece of shit, if I kill you, okay, and I want to make peace with you and make the spirits good with you, you're going to probably find, you know, some tobacco and maybe an eagle feather there. You're not going to find a Bible. So what I want to know is, why would someone who is a devout and renowned atheist, what, he found Jesus after he committed murder? I mean, I don't understand that, you know. And I just, and then you get these fucking idiots like that piece of shit fucking Nancy Grace, that stupid, uninformed, uneducated, loudmouth, posing, ugly man beast fucking Nancy Grace to come on the television and, well, you know, Chris Benoit wasn't happy because he had been at the pinnacle of the wrestling business. He was part of the Four Horsemen, and now he was only part of Raw. This is what the woman said. Now, how many stupid things are in that statement? I do. You guys are laughing, right?
Oh, my
so,
Lord.
So all I'm saying is that, you know, everybody in the world is a hater these days. Everybody in the world just will go on whatever fucking pile of horse shit that anybody fucking feeds them. And to this day, I've never seen anything that says that anything else was investigated, any other possible theory was pursued. This was the story. This is the story that everybody ran with, and this is the way they accepted it. Now, if that was anybody else besides this high-profile celebrity and there weren't other manipulations and other forces at work and other money at work, then it is my theory that if that was me with my wife and kid dead there, they would have investigated the possibility that I was murdered and that it was made to look like a suicide. And then I'm going to say that there's several other deaths. You know, I'm not going to get deep into that, but other people very closely associated with the situation with Chris that also all died within a year period, you know. And I don't want to offend any other families, but like I said, all you got to do is do the research, and you can see how many people. Like, wow, you have Frankenstein on your dress, man. She's all green and black, guys, man. But anyway, no, they don't care. No. They want controversy on this show. It's all good, man. Attack me. She's wearing her Billy bracelet, man, which is those skulls that wear, guys. She went out and got one and said it's her Billy bracelet. But that's my thing about Chris Benoit. I'm not saying I know better or I believe this or
no,
that.
No, I just think you have a very you have a very different opinion to most of America, and I think, you know, it's good that it at least gets out there. That's all.
Right. I just think that if you just use logic, wow. I'm looking at a pair of my pants wet a couple weeks ago that were taken off me when someone spilled a drink all over my balls and my dick. But anyway, hey, that's how it is, man. Ladies, remember, I got one here that'll testify. I don't care if you dump your vodka all over my junk, but if you do dump your vodka on my junk, you are required to take my pants off, dry my pants, and service me. And that's the way it works, okay? Am I lying? Tell them. Am I lying? Say it.
Absolutely not.
You heard her, right? You heard her say absolutely not. There's actually photographic evidence of that. You should have used a wide-angle lens. You could have fit it all in there. Anyway, that's, you know, it's just the idea of, like I said, if it was anybody else, why would you not check it out? But let's move on, man. Like, you've already made sure everybody knows I'm the most nuttiest fucking person in the world. Can I touch your titties while I'm on the radio? I'm touching titties right now, guys.
You're not talking
really
to me.
Nice.
That's a long range.
Listen, no, I'm talking to you. Listen, they're really, really big, and they're really, really nice, and they're 100% real. There's no silicone in these things. Man, genetically wonderful thing. Wow, are you cold, or are you just happy to see me?
So, yeah. All right.
You guys are getting
to... Huh?
Go ahead. I said, you're not supposed to be the one stuttering. I'm the one with the titties in my hand. Go ahead.
Ah, it's all good. I don't stutter with titties, but
okay.
But yeah, so yeah, why don't you get into, you know, how the whole cult fiction thing came to be, how the whole entire you know,
cool.
how
that
was
good.
Came up with,
and actually it picks up right where I was before we got into Chris Benoit, and that was that I had become aware of Combat Zone and of IWA Mid-South. And I had been cast in a indie horror film that ended up becoming a wash, actually, in 2003. And I was at a horror movie convention, Cinema Wasteland, Mad Props, Cleveland, Ohio, one of the coolest shows in the horror convention business. Ken Kish, hey, what's up, brother? And I was sitting at this table promoting this film that we were going to do. I was cast in that with a lot of the cast members of the original Night of Living Dead, which is also when I met them and began a very close friendship, including someone adopting me as their tea-talking son. We can talk about that more in a minute. But what happened was I'm standing there at this table, and Toby Klein and Deranged walked up to the table and said, hey, man, what's this? And started talking to me. And I knew who they were. And so I worked there from the first minute. I said, wow, what do you guys do, you know? Because my buddy actually had run up and said, hey, those guys work for those two wrestling companies you like. I'm like, oh, yeah, they do. So I totally worked them. I was like, what do you guys do? And they're like, we're pro wrestlers. I'm like, really? I really like wrestling. Like, let's go out and smoke a joint, you know what I mean? And you know, part of the rest is history, I guess. There's what I meant about being a real manager, you know? So I was managing, and I loved what both of them did. I loved their characters, and so we became brothers instantly that night, and just are still my brothers, of course. And I want to elaborate on that about cult fiction and what's real, what's not, in a minute here. But so basically, the idea, you know, Toby and Deranged, once they got to know me, and Brain Damage, were like, "Wow, dude, like, you've got a really good head for this. You're a great talker. You're a character, like." You need to get back into this shit. Why don't you come manage us, kind of deal? And so in 2003, the concept of Cult Fiction was born, 2003, which was basically, okay, who are my favorites? The Four Horsemen. So how do we take this? Well, an ultra-violent Four Horsemen meets the Manson family, meets Mad media references and pop culture references, meets the fucking Brady Bunch. And that's the whole meat of what's behind Cult Fiction. So 2003, Toby started taking me around, working a little stuff with him. 2005, I came to my first CZW show live. From 2005, I was almost at every show in 2005, most of them in 2006, with Toby and Necro pestering John Zandig, Maven Bentley, and others to give me a chance in the company. And I was giving, you know, shout out to the Blackout earlier, but really coming in there with a couple of my friends was one thing, but coming into that awesome company and what I saw and what I respected, well, you know, Ruckus and Robbie and Sabian and Kingston, like, they were the first guys that I didn't know when I walked in the door that befriended me and got behind me and actually gave me props and said, I think you ought to give this guy a chance, to all that would listen. And that's a rare thing, you know what I mean? And they've continued to just, like, humble me and encourage me all the time. I mean, those are some real motherfuckers, and there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of assholes too. We all know that, I just love those guys. So literally 2 years of trying nonstop, and I basically at the end of 2006 just completely gave up, like, it's never going to happen. And lo and behold, 4 months later, I get a phone call. Hey, John wants to give you a chance. And that led to my May 2007 Restore the Order promo appearance with Toby Klein, and my set, I feel sometimes like I was either set up to fail or set up to excel, but I got to tell you, like, I presumed that if I was going to manage Toby and Necro, that there would be some kind of heel turn, because who in the fuck ever heard of a face manager? Well, let alone a manager. And no, instead, I debuted at Tournament of Death in front of the most jaded, crazy fucks in the world, coming out at the side of a guy that's hugely over who they love. So, you know, watch the DVD and hear the chants of fuck you and no, he thinks he's Corporal Robinson and what did you do, you pussy, and all that other shit. Oh, hey, can I tell you a funny story about that TOD thing? Everybody, you know, pick up that TOD 6, get the DVD out, watch me and Toby come out to the ring, and then watch me grab the microphone, start a promo that gets a couple chuckles, my first couple lines, and then watch me stammer, stutter, fall apart, and be booed, and spurred one hater to post it on YouTube for 2 weeks, the worst promo in the history of wrestling, which is hyperbole because it may not have been, you know, Bobby Heenan or even Billy Graham at his peak. It sure was not the worst.
It ended up on Botchamania, too.
Oh, really? Great. Well,
Yeah, man.
The true story of that promo, once and for all, at that time, the first story I put out was that you don't get it. I was trying to present a character that was a bumbling, well-meaning, stammering idiot that you could get behind because he was so, you know, bumbling that you'd have to like him, which was a fucking outright lie. Okay, that was the first attempt at damage control, you know, when you're the worst promo in wrestling, in the history of wrestling. Then the next one was, no, see, what you don't know was that I was doing good, and then all of a sudden I looked over that ring divider, and these two girls in the backstage area pulled their shirts up and showed me their titties, and ha-ha-ha-ha, okay? Now, here's the big shocker. Here's the big shocker, the true reason why Billy started good out of the gate and then tripped over his own feet. 10 rules in CZW at that time I was made aware of. Number two, no unauthorized mic work. Number two, okay? My first match with the company after 2 years of trying to get a chance. Toby, I'm like, dude, like, I'm going to sink here. Like, you know, you got to get the mic when you get out there and give them a reason why I'm fucking here so they don't murder me, you know, right? Well, Toby comes out there promising he's going to do it, starts clowning with all the fans, forgets what he's going to do. I see Ed O'Mac waiting, and I'm like, uh-oh, it's going to pass, and no one's going to say nothing. And then in that moment, I made the life-changing decision to, in my first match with CZW, grab the microphone without permission and start talking. And try to start talking about Cult Fiction, who I was told did not exist. No, you're not Cult Fiction. There's only the Tough Crazy Bastards. I started out good, and then as I got that first chuckle and I turned towards the backstage entrance, that's when my eyes met the eyes of what looked to be a pissed off John Zandig. And if anybody else thinks they could go out there, take the mic without permission, their first match in CZW, and then all of a sudden lock eyes with the boss and not stutter and not to fuck meet the motherfucker, because I thought the man was going to kill me, because I love John and he's never given me any reason to fear him, but I would not want to fucking piss the guy off, and I certainly wasn't there to piss him off. I was there to hope that he would let me be a part of his company, and it went off. We did what we did. That's the truth. And the truth also was that after I came back there, John patted me on the back and said, can you be at the arena in 2 weeks? And I was like, yeah. And then, you know, it's funny because then when they're congratulating the winner and all that, and all the workers from the tournament go out there to the ring and all, like, watch the DVD again, you'll see me coming out with Toby and Dylan. You hear someone go, what did you do? Da-da-da-da-da. Well, the reason I was out there was not because I was presuming anything. It was because John motherfucking Zandig told me to get out there with my guys and that I was now part of the company. So fuck you, hater motherfuckers, because guess what? He wouldn't have told your fucking know-nothing, no-doing, no-life fucking ass to go back out there, because he wouldn't have had you out there in the first place. So that's the honest-to-God story about that first appearance. And hey, we all know I got better after that, so, you know, what the fuck do you want from me? First time, that's a high-pressure situation, people, you know. Like I said, anybody can think they can go out there and be part of fucking CZW, but, you know, that's just not the fucking truth, man, you know. And
fuck the haters.
Yeah, so, hey, man, you guys want to ask me anything about that fucking promo this week?
Okay. Well, we can skip to that. That's fine. I got a bunch of shit, but, yeah.
No, take your time. You don't care if, like, can I play with this lady while I'm talking to you guys?
Absolutely.
Okay,
as long as you don't stop talking.
Keep going. Her hair is really soft.
Throw her the mic so I know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Oh, you want to play by play? I'm stroking her hair.
Yeah. You know,
her head is
on
my abdominal region, and I'm standing and she's sitting. What do you need to know next?
Not bad. So
confirm there's a woman here, so yes, I'm here.
Yes, I'm here.
You heard it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The world hears it.
Billy has a thing for black nylons and black fishnets and black leather boots and all that stuff.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, all you motherfuckers calling me a fag, yelling shit. What are you doing right now, you fucking shit-talking? Yeah, how many of you on CZW fans have ever even touched a woman? That's what I want to know, besides you ones that are married to some fucking bitch that fucking runs your life.
Certainly not the other guy that lives in my town, I can tell you that much. But, Billy and Eric, I think, both know who I'm talking about. If not, I don't know. But either way.
I do,
let's
but
talk
I won't start.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
No. I'm trying
not to.
But let's get into some more important shit. Like,
okay.
You know, speaking of haters, you know, let's talk about some of the crazy, crazy bumps that you've taken as a manager. And that's the one thing that, to me, separates you from other managers, because some of the severe abuse that you've took, a lot of other managers will look around and go, nah, fuck that.
Well,
you know,
a freak show's
going to jump on me.
We'll talk about that stuff. It's awesome because, I mean, to me, in my mind, you know, getting the chance, I mean, trust me, from the minute I decided I wanted to do it, you know, take it another go and try to get in this company, Combat Zone Wrestling, go in there with Toby and Necro. I mean, I loved the deathmatch stuff and the hardcore because I had watched ECW when it was infamous, and I went, wow, like, you know, ECW spawned this bastard fucking child, and ECW was supposed to be the bastard child. What the fuck is going on here? I mean, no offense, man, but CZW compared to ECW is like ECW compared to 1964 with Dick the Bruiser. I mean, it really is. And no offense to ECW, because, you know, we either have them to thank or we have them to blame for what the fuck is the particular ailment that besieges everyone
wow.
as a part of something like Combat Zone Wrestling, Tournament of Death, Cage of Death, anything like that. But
yeah.
I certainly had it in my mind that I want to fucking get beat up. I want to bleed. I want to take this to another level. You know what I mean? Like, this one fake smack on the manager, like from back in 1982, that doesn't cut it in this shit. Like, and it actually, as I was watching a lot of the tapes and stuff like that, it actually, and not really CZW, but some of the other indie feds and all, it kind of bothered me that I said, how real is that? That these managers are out there fucking with these guys that are killing with each other, but they don't get killed. And it doesn't make any sense to me. So obviously also being at the advanced stage of senility and Alzheimer's and the geriatric that I am, I also have a bug up my ass about youth and showing that I'm just as tough as you kids are and shit like that. So that's when it became in my mind.
Old men run out on the lawn all the time.
And we were talking about that first match at TOD6. Well, you know, very obviously, maybe it wasn't my balls in seizing the microphone without permission that gave John Zandig the thing, hey, Billy, come back. But I think maybe, you know, when brain damage was slowly burning a cigarette through my fucking forehead, I think that might have been more what got me my job than my awesome promo. You
a little
know what
persuasive,
I mean?
Definitely.
One second. We're going to wait to smoke that kind bud until I get off this interview, okay, because I'm going to need it after these guys get done getting all my dirty secrets out of me. I've been looking forward to that shit. This shit looks like a centerfold in fucking High Times, man. And you look like a centerfold in fucking any leading men's magazine, so this is perfect, man.
Check this out.
Listen, buds, booze, boobs with brains, and Billy Graham, man. Those are the bees you all need to pay attention to, man. You know what I mean? And boots. She's got
of
boots
course.
Too, man. Okay, I'll see you in a minute, dear. I'm going to continue to talk about wrestling. She said badass, too. How about that? Anyway, back to the bumps and the punishment and stuff like that. First of all, I got to give props, okay? Like, as far as taking the meanest bumps, particularly bumps, there's some people I can think of that would far surpass me in that department. The first thing that comes to mind, obviously Robbie Moreno, but, you know, Dewey Donovan taking that double DVD, you know, from Lobo off the Cage of Death. I believe Cage of Death 5, is that?
Yep.
Am I correct?
Yep. Yes, sir.
I mean, that
yeah,
is,
so.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the yeah. that is the craziest, no offense, Dewey, I love you, brother, like most retarded. Like, I mean, I don't know whether they blackmailed him or whether they paid him a lot of money or whether he wasn't feeling good about himself that day or whatever. But I'm just telling you, man, I would not take that double DVD through a table into the concrete.
Cage of Death is coming up and you never know, you know.
I'm saying if I have anything to say about it, I ain't going to do that. You know, I'll run right out of my clothing and run naked out the front door of the arena rather than take a DVD to a table in the concrete from 40 feet up.
I hear you, man.
That's pretty fucked up, okay? It's pretty insane. It's pretty balls to the wall. And, I mean,
sure
God
is.
Bless the man. I love the brother, man. Every time I see him, it's always a pleasure because he's another one that, you know, if it wasn't for what he did in that company, I wouldn't be any, and you know, one of the things I admire the most about Dewey is his ability to, like a stage actor, you know, I really try to pay attention to him. Like, he made me realize that I needed to start emoting like I was on a stage more, you know, like
he's
exaggerating
the best mime in wrestling, man.
My facial expressions and things. I need to play to the back row, you know, not the people sitting in front of me. And I think he's so good at that because he can say a lot with an expression. Now, obviously, Robert Moreno has competed in Tournament of Death, taken all kinds of sick bumps throughout his tenure in CZW, and that's another. Now, on to my particular shit, past the cigarette burn. Yeah, the freak show incident was kind of the one. It's like 3 months of get this retard out of CZW, and of course, the night that Lane and freak show combined to murder me at Dishonorable Conduct in August of 2007, that really kind of started a turn in the perception of Billy Graham, you know what I mean?
Right.
It was stupid. And I mean, you know, I guess I can speak freely about it now. I mean, it was my idea. And quite honestly, you know, Freak Show and Lane were like, no, dude, we can't do that to you. And I'm like, look, man, your first time coming in the arena here. They liked you at TOD, but I know how these pricks are in this building. They already fucking hate my guts, even though they're supposed to like me. They're probably going to get rid of me anyway. Why don't I do something that'll help endear you to these people? You know, even though they were kind of casting a light of the heels. And so bottom line is I wanted to do that more first. Primarily, I wanted to do that to help them get over with the fans. And I think it worked to a certain degree, but it also had the side effect of like a couple of people going, wait a minute. And this guy isn't so bad after all. He's retarded. You know, like he look what he just did. And I did suffer quite a bit from that crushing, like the Roadrunner Coyote cartoon. And it was weird because the very next day I had to be in Pittsburgh working on the Night of Living Dead documentary for 2 weeks, lugging equipment and all this other stuff. And, I mean, I was all bandaged up. I can remember the next morning coming to a breakfast table with Chuck Cyphers, who you know from The Fog, Halloween, John Franklin, also you know from Children of the Corn, Tom Savini, several other people sitting at the breakfast table of Prestige. And I walk up to the table with my partner Rob, and Savini says, what the fuck happened to you, Billy? Because I'm all bandaged up and all this shit. I'm like, I'm Rob, tell him. He's like, he last night was his wrestling thing. He's in a match managing this guy, and this nearly 400-pound guy, like, you know, crushed him and blah, blah, blah. And then someone said, I thought wrestling was fake. And then this young lady sitting at the table jumped up and said, it's not fake. You know, yes, it's a show. It's
still real to me. Yeah.
Fake means no one's getting hurt. And I'm like, yeah,
right.
We're not talking about the WWE here, you know. And so, I love that moment. And very obviously, I mean, as far as that goes, really, the honest to God truth, and anybody in the business will tell you this, I mean, you know, a manager can't be getting beat up every night because then there's no payoff. And it was something that was really frustrating to me to have to conform to because I'm so anxious to go out there and push the bar and do anything I can do, you know, that enhances my guys and adds a little bit more entertainment to the show and then challenges me physically to do something more retarded than I did the time before. If there was no checks on me, very obviously I'd go out there and get the living shit beat out of me and bleed every single goddamn match, which wouldn't be good for business. So most of the things you've seen me do, ironically, are things that, it's a real process to fight for and to try to even – you know, make happen. And I mean, this year, I think what we did has been really good as far as that kind of stuff goes. I mean, I think that Scotty Vortex, you know, gave me what I deserved at TOD after all my meddling and being the snake that I am. And I must say, you know, I'm certainly, you know, like, you know, 3 years of being a face manager, which we covered earlier, does that really exist and surviving and you know, bottom line is, man, I can't thank the real CZW fans, the real people that attend the shows, the real people all over the world. I get letters every day, every week from, I don't care, Venezuela, Germany, Japan. There's so much. You have no idea. I mean, it goes back to that story about young Daniel Sines. Like, you never know. While all these haters are putting you down, how did I know that while this guy's saying I'm a retard that doesn't belong near a wrestling ring, here's this little boy fighting this battle in Texas, and every month, what Billy Graham does entertains him and means something to him. And I affect and touch his life. And I try to tell all the guys and girls that, you know, as dark as things can seem or as oppressive it is or as these fucking people putting us down, like, we don't know. We don't know how many people's lives we really affect and how we touch in a positive way And, you know, that was the biggest example of that. So, I mean, certainly the CZW fan base, the real fan base, like, you know, I'm humbled because I obviously bonded with them and they began to appreciate me and encourage me and support me and support Cult Fiction. And finally, you know, promoters started to see the potential of the idea of Cult Fiction. And I don't think we've even come close to peaking with any of that. I mean, I have so many ideas about where we need to go with it, and it's certainly going to continue.
Right.
And it's very humbling because those people, I mean, bottom line is, it's the truth. I mean, I'm not a guy that is at this point in his life hoping that Vince McMahon is going to come along and sign me. Okay. I love indie entertainment, and thusly, I love indie wrestling. I love what I grew up on, going in that little building with 400 or 500 people, you know, having a good time. I'm not knocking the mega corporation or nothing like that. It is what it is. A lot of people get paid. A lot of people earn a good living. A lot of people are entertained. But for me, the mom-and-pop operation, the little crowd, there's not only no shame in it, there's a pride in it. And when people are saying, why would this retard do that for that much money? It's like, I got news for you, man. There's things in this life, there's challenges in this life that go beyond money. Okay, and so guess what? You can't understand why this guy would do that for $250 because you wouldn't do it for $250,000 because you're a fucking pussy. Okay, and somebody that challenged, like, it's obviously not about being a millionaire. You know, being a person of honor and accomplishment in combat zone wrestling or any of these indies. You know, I mean, there's other indies I could say good things about. You know, Ring of Honor. You know, I see, you know, Dragon Gate, Evolve. Like, there's a lot of good shit going on, man. You know, Jersey All Pro. IWA East Coast is another company I have a lot of good to say about. East Coast. I have nothing good to say about another one with those initials. I'm not going to give them the time. You know, we have other things to talk about. So, only one thing is, man, I don't like it when I fucking order 3 steak Baja Chalupas and I say no fucking lettuce, man. I fucking mean no lettuce. And the next time I order those 3 fucking Chalupas and I say steak Baja, no fucking lettuce.
Where's
John,
that at?
John, it's the Taco Bell, man, in Kentucky, man. This guy, John Williams, he works there.
Kentucky.
He had a shirt on with the Kool-Aid man on it.
Hey, don't,
like that.
Hey.
It seems like a rotten character, but I really have no interest in that guy.
Yeah, but you know what? He was afraid that I was giving him a bunch of bull, because he's got this issue with bull. So I think when I said the word bull, I'm not giving you no bull, I want my order right, he started shaking and he just didn't make my fucking chalupas right, man. And I'm going to let it go this time because he looked like he just got off the fucking short bus. And
that's a damn shame. I heard about them Taco Bells out there. It's terrible thing.
Yeah, so
their employees
I mean,
need to be checked, man.
That's the whole skinny on the fucking Taco Bell program, man, okay? Like, fuck you, dude. But anyway,
I hear the Taco Bells have definitely turned rotten.
Shout out to the bullpen, man, from Billy Graham, man, straight to the brother.
Oh,
man.
Definitely.
And shout out to, you know, all the Cult Fiction supporters all over the world, man. Yo, Chris,
on.
Man, DJ Melt on fire, man, the official Cult Fiction DJ, rocking it all over Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Give him a shout, man, all the peeps, man, that support us. But,
Beck,
you wanted to know more about this getting beat up shit or what, like, I mean, yeah, the electric staple gun with DJ Hyde at Cage of Death. You know, 2 years ago, that was a fun, staples are staples, but, you know, when you got a Sears Craftsman and you set it so it'll hold a 2x4 into a wall, it's probably not that much in a home kit, you know what I mean? Because what happened was the staple bent when it hit my skull both times, so rather than come out, it wanted to pull my whole forehead off my head, and, it's not a funny, but, you know, anytime you're fucking with light tubes, as, anybody that's had some accidents can tell you, you know, there's always a possibility of something very bad happening, which did happen a few weeks ago in Massachusetts with my buddy 13 there. Got, you know, really badly cut. And me and him spent 5 hours in an emergency room in Lowell, Massachusetts, while the rest of CZW was probably not only back in Philly, but probably already in bed. We were still sitting in an emergency room. 26 stitches, thank God he's all right, and, you know, that's all I should really say about that one, but shit happens, man.
Yeah, that was an awesome match.
Oh, you watched the match.
Yeah.
Well, fuck.
Well,
if you
I've
watched
seen clips.
Anybody,
I've seen
look,
clips.
Anybody that watched the match knows when he got cut. So, like, I'm sorry, man. It was an accident, and some fucking manager I am, right? But anyway, yeah, it's pretty. I watched the DVD, so it's pretty apparent when the cut happens, and it's still mind-boggling to me how it did. But shit happens. But and hey, how about that 13, man? Let's give him props, man. You know what, I'm so sick
I'll
tell you what, from the first time he I want to thank Mike Burns, you know, for 13, formerly known as Lucky, because there was a lot of people up for that position, and there was a lot of politicking and debating going on about who the guy was that we were going to choose. And I talked to several people.
I believe it was Troy Walters originally, right?
I just got kissed.
Update.
What happened was I trusted Mike's instincts on that, and he gets the credit for that. And I think that Lucky into 13, it not only set off with that awesome promo of me and JC attacking him and beating him in, that I thought was like a step up as far as the theatricality of it and just the storyline. I just think that the character transformation by the next show, you know, there as many, you know, so-called smart marks can sit in the fucking, you know, fourth row yelling, "You still suck, Lucky," or whatever, but I don't know what you're watching, because every match that he stepped into with us, for a guy that went from a straight worker to a deathmatch worker, and he's still an aerial artist, I mean, I think he's an incredibly underrated talent, and I think he stepped it up all year round, and one of the coolest character transformations I've seen in indie wrestling in a really long time, and he's beyond worth being, I was going to mention this earlier, Call of Fiction, you know, and I was talking about lines blurred between truth and reality. The bottom line is, man, like, not just anybody is ever going to be put in Call of Fiction. I don't care if, you know, and I'm not saying this to be an arrogant cocksucker. I have mad respect for the people I work for. I love CZW, man. I'm not going to ever throw that company under a bus, because I'm grateful to it and I love it so much, unlike a taco promotion that I don't love. And I'll throw that motherfucker on the bus as long as I'm fucking breathing, because he's a fucking piece of shit and he threatened my fucking life, man. And yeah, I'm still talking shit though, aren't I, Taco Boy? But anyway, the thing is, man, fucking fucking abuse.
Hey,
I can
bring up another match again if you like.
Yeah. What's that?
I said I could bring up another Mexican if you'd like, and what do you think about a certain Mr. Cala?
Oh, man.
What does that say?
Well, I mean,
Mexico.
Mr. Crappifornia, I mean, first of all, is he even a wrestler for real? I mean, because to me,
I
don't think he is. I mean, what I know is that he somehow has money, which is crazy for a guy who couldn't pass a second grade spelling test. You know, I mean, I don't know where he gets. He's probably on welfare, and he saves up for food stamps or crap.
I think he's the leading orange salesman in the entire country.
I fucking wish that so many of my dear friends, I mean, Toby, Call Fiction members, Toby, Masada, JC, God bless them, all these guys, like, I so wish they would have been wise to what he was about before they ever went and worked for him, because he's.
Yeah.
Basically, a guy. I mean, this bottom line is anybody in the entertainment business. I don't care what you do, an actor. If union scale is $868 for a fucking actor, okay, and that's what union scale is. What actors do is they work, okay. So guess what? If you're making a fucking movie, and it's on a home videotape in your living room, and you can pay an actor the rate that he gets paid, whether it's $868 minimum or the $25,000 that some guy gets a day, he'll come work for you. That's what we do. We work in our profession like anybody else, you know. So, you know, you got to get a payday. But what he does is laughable, and I think everybody's figured him out by now. Nobody should go work for him anymore. But still, people need money, I mean, to pay their bills. But, I mean, this guy, he can't wrestle, he can't talk, he can't work, he looks like a piece of fucking shit. And basically what happened, how my heat starts, I guess, is that when, you know, when that TOD promo came out this summer where Billy Graham quit CZW, and 75% of the world believed it, including all the smart marks, believed it, you know. Hey, I can't believe you quit. I saw your promo on the DVD. Good, smart guys. You know, and obvious reasons, we were compelling a storyline along and explaining my absence, because I wasn't going to be there in July. I was in Indianapolis as a guest, and doing other business at the Famous Monsters Convention, and we knew that 6 months in advance. So, you know, why not make it mean something, not just, oh, Billy isn't here, you know? And I think it worked,
right,
very obviously, because it got people talking, and there was a lot of shocked faces in August when I pulled off that fucking robe. There was actually knuckleheads all over that building that didn't know that was Billy Graham coming out the ring. I saw it in their faces. And
So
I'm not saying nobody was smart enough to figure it out. Some of them were, but there was definitely, you know, they were, oh, Billy Graham's always whining in the credit panties and all that shit. Like, it's like, you fucking stupid fuck. But anyway, when that all went up, when that promo went up and everything, all of a sudden this guy, like, pops up on my Facebook and all over the place on Facebook, like, all these workers and DJ and everything like that, like, Billy Graham's a pussy, he sucks, he has no talent, and blah, 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 blah. Apparently, one of the many who fell for Billy Graham quit CZW was Mr. Crappy Fornia. So, in my humble but intelligent and experienced opinion, Mr. Crappy Fornia actually believed that Billy Graham had quit Combat Zone Wrestling, was turning on DJ Hyde publicly, and that by putting me down, he was somehow going to miraculously appear, you know, as a new guy on the roster because he sucked a dick orally over the internet. You know what I mean? Like, which was a big fucking mistake because everybody knows, right? I mean, guys, yeah, you know me, right? Doesn't everybody know by now not to fuck with Billy Graham on the internet? Seriously, is it really? I don't care who
they
you
should.
Are. Has anybody, look, I'm not saying I've beaten them all. There's been some battlers amongst the troll population. I'm going to tell you that right now. Some of them I even can respect their troll powers, but, you know, and even their powers to debate and be dicks. I can respect that, but, you know, dude, 90% of the people that are going to try to step up to me on the fucking internet, I'm sorry, you know, they're going to get diced. And you know, I just kind of pick and choose, you know, when I mean, you know, most of the time, man, I'm being straight. You know, when I get mad and I cross that K word and I, you know, I'm like, whatever, I'm putting the heat on myself and taking it off people that don't deserve it. You know, like, we all know some of the issues, what they're over. It's like, you know, if you can't do nothing yourself, who the fuck are you to criticize people who dare to do anything, you know? And that's one. But then I guess the most frustrating thing with those people, beyond anything, is that so many times they think they have all these answers. Well, why did this fucking do this? And it's like they're so, so not smart like they think they are because they are so hopelessly unaware of the reality of what's going on in real life with all of us, of what the real dynamic is. Everything from money that's available to real problems going on in the people's lives, to who's getting along with who, to, you know, there's who got sick, who got locked. Are you guys there? Did I lose you? Oh, I lost them.
No, hold on.
Okay.
Jay,
yeah? I'm back.
All right.
Yeah.
We lost Jay Cap for a second.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know what the fuck happened.
These people think that they've got the answers, and really, to anybody in the business, what they're revealing is that they really don't know. Really don't know what's going on, that they really don't have a grasp on reality or practicality. You know, it's all easy to say, why don't you bring in this guy, and then do this? And it's like, it's just not that simple, and it never will be, and it never was. And it's like, I used to wonder when I was a kid, like, wow, how come they started that storyline with Hercules and then they didn't finish it? Like, I'm getting sick of these storylines that don't finish. Well, because there's shit going on in real life, man, okay? And, you know, that's all that, and I mean, I'd also like to say, I guess, man, that after this whole year up and down of all this other shit, man, like, I really got to say, man, I want to give props to everybody in CZW, man, because I think that no matter what anybody's done, I think there's been a lot of improvements in the way we're going. and what DJ's trying to do. I hate to, you know, like say something nice about the guy I hate more than anyone in CZW, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the guy's worked tirelessly. He put his ass on the line. There's a lot of people that have put their full intent and heart. And I'll tell you what, like everybody on that roster right now deserves to fucking be there. They're dedicated to the fucking company. I mean, and, you know, going back to the stories about talking and hanging out in that parking lot, I mean, and then right up to my respect and falling in love with CZW, I mean, for me, no matter what's going on, man, for me, every time I get to walk through that curtain and get near that ring in that building, it's an honor, it's a privilege, it's humbling. It's like I am walking in the footsteps of all those people. And when I say all those people, I mean from fucking before there was ECW. It was like EWA or something. I remember seeing Don Morocco and Tito Santana in that building. I saw, you know, you name them, Sabu, Taz, Rob Van Dam, Mysterio, like fucking Terry fucking Funk, Abdul the Butcher, man, Mick Foley, Eddie Gilbert, man, like right all the way up to, man, fucking goddamn, man, John Zandig, Wifebeater, Mondo, Lobo, and all the way, you know, all the guys says, but man, Nick fucking Gage, man, seriously, man, I mean, say what the fuck you want, whatever, man, you know, hate all you want, motherfuckers, because I'll tell you what, Nick Gage is the fucking man, okay, I'm just so glad, you know, that back on top ain't no fucking joke, man. I'm really glad to see fucking Nikki went over there, kicked that pussy fucking German's fucking crap fucking ass, brought our fucking ultraviolent underground title back to the fucking combat zone where it fucking belongs, man. And right there, man, every time I walk out there, all I know, man, no matter what's going on, is I look at somebody like fucking Nikki, I look at fucking Sabian, you know, and I say, you know, this is what I'm, these guys did this for me, man. That's what I got to live up to, man. I better fucking do as good. Hey, love me, hate me, criticize me, put me down. There's one thing you will never fucking say about me. I don't give a fuck who you are, is that I give. There's no such thing as 110%, by the way, people. Just like there's no such word as Celtic. But anyway, what I'm saying is, man, I give 100 motherfucking percent, 100 fucking percent. And I was starting to talk about that earlier with the role of managers in the business, what a lot of people don't realize, you know, and like, since my time in CZW, you know, I put people up in my house. I'll make them meals if they're hungry. I'll make sure they get here. If they have nowhere to go, they can come stay with me. I cut over 40 music videos for CZW, and I'm a professional, and that takes a lot of time. It's something I normally get paid a lot of money to do. And you name it. I don't give a fuck. If it's like, hey, like someone needs to cut the belts, you know, cut the buckles off the belts for the strap match between Lobo and Maven, I'll cut the buckles off the belts. I mean,
right.
To me, all of us got to realize, you know, and like some of these guys that get attitude problems and stuff, I can only say this, man. A lot of you could look at some of the people that bust their balls that way. I mean, Sammy Callahan, look at what that guy does for indie wrestling.
Yeah.
Look how passionate, how dedicated, how he's nonstop, he fucking lives it. You know what I mean? And this is like,
that's a worker.
There's so many people that could look at somebody like Sammy, like, you know what I mean? Hey, controversial figure, man. Love him or hate him, man. Guy didn't start out as my friend. He's my friend now, Brett Lauderdale. Okay, and you know what? I'll give him props right now. One of the reasons that despite the fact that when we first met, we weren't exactly buddies and we are now, that came from seeing another person that's dedicated to bust their fucking balls, okay? Maven Bentley, man, whipping post of how many fucking people, right? If it wasn't for that fucking man, none of us would be doing what we're doing right now. He's fucking totally dedicated, and what does he get besides the satisfaction of helping us all have that opportunity, you know what I mean? So there's so many people, man, that I mean, you know, just are dedicated to the business, and I think that a lot of other people need to realize that, man, it's more than just getting yourself booked on a show, you know? You do need to go out, promote the company, do other things, contribute other talents that you have, you know, and we've got that now, you know, I don't want to blow anybody's image, but I'm just saying there's people that you would be surprised that are coming forward with creative talents and saying, hey, you know what, I can make those posters, I can glue that together, hey, you know what, I know a guy that's an artist, let me hook you up with this guy. So it's like, it's do or die, man, you know, we're not the WWE, and for me, if somebody isn't dedicated to doing every fucking thing they can to make it better, then they need to get out of the way and give it to somebody that does care that much, because I'm certainly not in it because it's fucking paying my mortgage or buying me a house or getting me fucking health insurance, okay? I'm in it for the fucking love of it, for the love of entertaining the people, for the love of the challenge, for the love of the show, for shocking fucking people, as Danny Havoc said. I've had a problem with that all my life, just like he has all me. My life's considerably longer, so that's another reason I love that fucking guy, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I assume tonight was going to just be a shoot show, guys. So if any of the guys in the locker room are listening, what's he fucking doing? Look, man, it's a lot of pressure, man. Like, it's like, come on here and fucking play the character tonight. I wasn't in the mood to do it. I mean, it's
everything is everything. Think that any bridges have been burned. Before I get to the next question, which is a segue off of what you were talking about, but did your companion over there bail out on the Uncensored Radio, or what happened?
I'll ask her. They wanted to know if you bailed out on Uncensored Radio.
Because Billy talked a lot of shit,
she just wants to smoke a cigarette. Well, no, I think she. She's getting kind of clammed up. I don't know if she's
see,
in the mood to shock
see.
Anybody or what is it?
Huh? Well, gotta be what it gotta be, man.
I'm not shocking enough? Okay. I'm shocking right now, trust me, okay? Let me kiss.
Okay, fantastic.
Say something. Say hi to them. Say something mysterious to them. Just say whatever. Here, say hi. Hold on.
Mysterious.
Really don't like being put on the spot. Hey guys, how you doing?
We're doing good.
Charlie's
we're doing
got
good.
Nothing on Billy Graham.
Yeah. How'd you like that? Wait, I got another girl here with me. Let her say something.
Billy is the sexiest girl I know.
Man, that girl has a beard, man. I gotta put her in the circus, man.
Yeah, that's not a good mood.
Listen, more so than you, it's like, I imagine you being on the phone probably wouldn't stop me and my lovely lady here. It's just more or less that other bearded woman is here that's stopping us, okay? You can catch my drift, guys? Like, sorry.
Right. Well, you
Billy's
know, bearded
I'll put it real
around,
clear. Billy's
you know.
Balls ain't swinging around with no other dudes around, okay? That's all there is to it.
Well, if the bearded lady would just, cigarette.
Last time I whipped my dick out in front of a dude, he wouldn't go home. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's something. Jeez.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know, going to, what happened with that whole speaking to people showing up at Vince's door and what Vince is about.
That was so... Yeah, but
what happened when you did show up at Vince's door?
okay, listen, I'm going to tell you the deal. First of all, yeah, let's talk about that promo. It was so fun. I'm glad some people, it did play in the arena on Saturday night and seemingly got a really good response from the fans, but I didn't see anybody even bother to mention it, you know, in any results anywhere or anything. I did, in the midst of all this shit, go to a lot of trouble, and my business partners, very busy schedule, were involved in all this film stuff right now. It's crazy. And, he took time out, brought over that very expensive professional film camera. He's a professional cinematographer, former, teacher at Full Sail Film School in Florida. And it's very well done as far as the way he shot it and everything. And, it's not just exactly every day someone just, they don't really exactly take well to people just walking up and cutting promos in front of their fucking building. I mean, that's obvious.
Right.
Even though they were the engineers of the DX invasion of WCW several years ago, which certainly didn't help quell my urges. Now, I got to say this. Twiz, Twisted Soul, Paul Milliner, our brother that I love, CF to the death, he said, why don't you cut a promo in front of Stanford? I said, yeah, I'm gonna. And then when it came out, he was all excited on Facebook, like, yeah, I'm really excited because that was my idea. Well, Paul, I never lie, and I hate to do this to you, and I know you encouraged me to do that, but actually I first got that idea 5 years ago, the first time I came up here with Rob and realized that he lived like 5 minutes from Vince's fucking building. I was like, oh, my God, someday I got to cut a promo in front of that fucking building. It just so happened now I moved up here. And so in the midst of his busy schedule, my partner dropped everything and said, man, you and your fucking wrestling shit. And he actually loves wrestling, but he just busts on me about it all the time. You and your fucking goddamn wrestling. Shut up about the fucking wrestling. Nobody cares about your fucking wrestling. But then, of course, you notice he still went and did that for me and everything. But what was interesting about doing that shoot with our other roommate, Johnny, who's the bearded lady here with me, we all went over there, me and Rob and him. And we went over there. He's a bearded lady Viking, man, with a big bottle of vodka, and he... basically is like Kevin Nash's brother. But the three of us jump out of the truck. You know, I'm in my garb there. You know, my costume or whatever you want to call it. My smoke and mirrors. And we get out and we start. I'm like, I got this thing, man. Like, I just, and I basically, you know, the promo I just made up like a half an hour before we split. I said, I'm going to do this promo for 3 days, but didn't know what I was going to say. And now we're getting ready to leave. Oh, I better come up with something good here. And my brother right. and I nailed it. And so what happened was, you know, Rob's filming me on the main camera and Johnny's filming me on his cell phone, which is great resolution. It's a B camera. You guys got to see it. There's another version of the promo, which sooner or later I'll post. But as I'm cutting the promo, out the corner of my right eye in my peripheral vision, I see all these people get off a public bus. And then I see these three cars slow up and stop, and people jump out. So all of a sudden, over on the sidewalk, is all these people with cell phones and cameras filming me because they think they're seeing a new WWE guy. Little did they know how much of their hard drive or gig space they were wasting on their fucking iPods and Blackberries and shit, because no, sorry, it wasn't some big WWE superstar. It was just little old leader of Cult Fiction, half-wit Billy Graham. But you know, someday,
next
who knows?
Four.
But I really think that I will continue to pursue getting even closer into the bowels of the building until finally police may be involved. And that's just
the
kind of guy I am,
with,
you know what I mean?
But
I mean, bottom line is I really would like to walk in the front door with brain damage and Masada and say, hey, like, can Vince look at our shit? You know, like, and just let it fly from there, you know what I mean? Which will probably be handcuffs to the Stanford Police Department. But why? We're just trying to get an audition.
It's a nice on day.
Besides, I don't know if there's any bottom
line.
It's
a day out.
No offense to anybody up there, you know, despite how blown up anybody is or anything, but I don't know. I haven't met anybody in the last decade that I think that would want to really tangle with Masada and brain damage in real life. I mean, and they're my brothers. I love them, and as I said earlier, not just anybody gets to wear our fucking colors, and that'll be the day. That just any old person gets to put on a Cult Fiction shirt and say, look who I am. I mean, even for the guys that it was only a momentary passing, you know, Tracy Smothers, Tank, you know, it's an exclusive group. It is.
Oh, perfect.
And it's not going to ever be anything but. And that's one place where I will draw the line. I don't care. You know, it's no disrespect. It's not me trying to be Mr. Stroke when I'm nobody. It's just that we do take pride in Cult Fiction. A lot of people, here's another scoop for you. You know, despite the fact that, say, you know, like Toby and Durange have not been a part of CZW for the last year and a half or whatever.
All right.
They still have say-so in what Cult Fiction does, and because that's what kind of family we are. And absolutely, you know, Masada and JC and 13 were people that, you know, Toby and Durange gave their blessing to, you know, and said, yes, those guys. And there were people that were suggested that I was told, not that motherfucker. And I'm like, okay, why? And that's just how we are. I mean, we really are brothers. It is a real clan, and it will continue to be that. And hopefully it will continue to be that as part of CZW. And because I certainly have no plan of giving up my dedication to there, and neither does anybody else that I'm working with right now. And certainly Toby, who the fans have been asking for a lot, would love to come back with us. And, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility with Deranged either. I mean, you know, Deranged is one of those 50-50 guys. I mean, a lot of fans like to shit on him, and a lot of fans love the fucking hell out of the brother. He was taking care of being a dad, you know, and with my nephew there and everything, and his wife, and I just spoke to him today. Hi, Cult Fiction fans from the Deranged One, says yo, so it's always going to be open. I mean, we'd love to do a thing with Dylan again with us, you know. It's unfortunate that the powers that be always seem to like not see that clearly, but man, that's another thing that just killed me about, you know. Obviously, with the situation with Brother JC, was just that, like, there was this brief time during the year 2010 for a few months where that vision of the ultra-violent Four Horsemen and, you know, a family of guys that were real with each other, and now we can, hey, now we've got our pieces together, now we can excel. It existed this
right.
year. And like I said, JC being taken out of the picture, I mean, it's just like, you know, a lot of people were confused on the whole thing, you know, the recent events or whatever. And I mean, you know, does anybody really think we can replace JC Bailey? I mean, he's not replaceable.
Never.
That's and nor would I put anyone in that position, or nor would I be that insulting. And thusly, the idea that, well, you know, really, does Cult Fiction need to pick up another member right now publicly?
Well, I wouldn't say that, but in the same token, just as you say that, you know, Chair Shot should never die because of a thing that JC loved, I would also say that, you know, you should never, you know, ban adding another member, because it's not replacing JC. It never will be. But
oh, yeah.
Cult Fiction is an expanding enterprise.
Yeah, no, I mean,
you know?
I'll put it to you this way. It's not, I should be more clear. I'm not saying that I don't want anybody else to become a member of Cult Fiction, but it just seemed that, you know, with everything that's gone on, and very obviously, you know, we've had, you know, Dylan in and out of the storyline earlier in the year, John Vandig in and out of the storyline earlier this year. And this is what I'm talking about, you know, Eddie Kingston. I love you, King, man. You know that, brother. Love you, man. You know, Danny on the shelf hurt, Scotty hurt, you know, so much, you know, that we overcame all that. That's on both sides of this, Cult Fiction, the Suicide Kings, and CZW, all three sides of it, to maintain and you know, unlike in times, I mean, the bottom line is this storyline started, you know, last September when I confronted DJ about, why are you not booking Cult Fiction, and then my Alice Cooper garb and all, my dad's gear. You know, to keep it going for this long in indie wrestling and keep re-enlisting the interest of the fans, it's like, that's something I'm proud that we've all accomplished together. And I just meant that right now, to try to make that part of this at the 11th hour, I just didn't think it was the right timing. As far as other members of Cult Fiction, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I will absolutely, right off the top of my head, I will tell you that there's two guys that absolutely are Cult Fiction material, have an open invite from Cult Fiction, and any promoter that wants to ever book them as part of Cult Fiction, they'll be welcomed with open arms by everybody in the group. And those two guys are Bull Payne and Madman Pondo. I mean, both of those guys are
right.
brothers. They fit the requirement. They're the real fucking deal. They bring something to the fucking table, and certainly their characters fit with Cult Fiction, you know what I mean? So I will relish any opportunity at any given point, whether it's in CZW or anywhere else, you know, to work with Pondo as a member of Cult Fiction or with Bull Payne as a member of Cult Fiction. I've had a strong desire for that for a long time, and I know the rest of the guys, you know, would like to work with them in that way too. So it's just, there you have it. Like, there's somebody that, you know, who knows, man, might turn around. Another guy I've always wanted to be a part of Cult Fiction is a Japanese wrestler, and that man's name is Jun Kasai. I would love for Jun Kasai to be Cult Fiction Japan.
From here to April.
Oh, really? You're telling me he's retiring?
He's supposed to come over in April.
Oh. Okay. Well. Okay, I thought you were telling me he was retiring. Well, I would love to see Jun Kasai as a member of Cult Fiction, and I Cult Fiction has been, you know, on the verge of going international for a long time, and I mean, if anybody saw a certain WXW promo that Thumbtack Jack cut last year, where he alluded to the fact that he had basically joined Cult Fiction, but then the powers that be decided that it was not to be. We got a chance to work as adversaries in the business. And Alex, I'm still sorry about that cut on your foot, man. I didn't mean to catch you with the nails on that helmet when I hit you. But shit happened. Boy, talk about Night of Infamy just passed, but I think there was two Nights of Infamy this year, and that first Night of Infamy was walking on pins and needles. And I don't know why I did it. Every once in a while, I'll save a strange souvenir from my wrestling adventures, and it's kind of out of frame. Like, you can almost see it. Like, it's a blurred motion when I pulled that syringe out of JC's foot. And then if you really watch close, you'll see me lay it on the ring apron, and then you'll see me palming it. And then if you, Jay, you were in the front row, you saw me showing everybody.
Yes, I was.
Showing that.
And showing me face up, yeah.
For whatever reason, as dumb as it is to have a syringe in your possession, especially when you're driving 3 hours from Philadelphia and stuff, I kept that syringe, and it's up there on my cabinet with all these crazy horror movie souvenirs and personal items from all over the place. I have that staple that DJ put in my forehead at Cage of Death, and I have that syringe that was in was in JC's foot. And I didn't know why I kept it at the time. You know, there's busted up shit that put in people all the time, but I mean, it's in a plexiglass case now, and I mean, you know, JC's blood is still on it, and it just, I'm really glad now that I kept it, you know, and give that to the young Grambling, Mary, my beautiful daughter, who I miss so much and I love so much. I will absolutely bequeath that to her with all the other worthless shit I give her. Hopefully, the world will worthless some points and royalties off some film projects that I'll be part of and everything. Yeah. Two movies already in the can. I'm going to bust out in 2011. First one, Revenge is Their Middle Name, directed by Anthony Matthews, a New Zealand filmmaker who relocated to Pittsburgh. Met him on a Toe Tag Pictures film I was working on that actually the scene is never going to come out, but it was a murder collection, the one that Ruckus appeared in. It was a technical clip with the effect, and so that's not going to be released, but I met Anthony working at, he was like a PA or an AD on that film. Put me in his movie, and yes, you can see the trailer. There's like a brief second of me there. Yes, that is me in the dress, people. I in Revenge is the Middle Name story, a lesbian serial killer. I play a gay, necrophiliac, cross-dressing gravedigger, and I welcome the challenge. Every great actor in the business that you can name practically has done drag. The guy was afraid to ask me to do the part, and I was like, why? He goes, well, you're not gay. I'm like, well, fucking everybody knows that, but what's your point? Well, we didn't want to. I'm like, look, man, is there going to be a dick anywhere near my body in any way? He's like, no. I go, then I don't give a fuck. Like, what do you mean? It's not the pussy biker or the junkie. It's a different part. So, yeah, I did that. That's going to be coming out this year. There's already a rough cut of it done. And then recently completed my part in Adam Albrandt's The Cemetery, demonic possession story. Billy has the Indian demon and a flashback to when he's human and some really deep shit. I've got something else I'm doing here in 2 weeks that I'm really excited about, but I really can't say anything yet. When I can, I will, but it is with it's being directed and starring a very big name in the horror genre, and being co-produced by my partner and some guys from the Stars Network, and I got a call the other day, and they asked me to do a part in that, and that's going to be great. And then I'm working behind the scenes on something all through January and February, being shot in Rhode Island with our client and dear friend William Forsythe, and that's involving a lot of people: Danielle Harris, Serena Vincent, Tiffany Shepis, Andrew Devoff, possibly Bill Moseley, it looks like, all friends of mine. And so that one I'm not acting in. I'm working behind the cameras on that one. And
right.
That's just part of it. You know, there you have it. You know, shit's starting to go good for me. And, of course, we have – Rob and I have our company, Legend Keeper Artist Promotions. Right now, we've currently got over 50 actors who we're not theatrical agents, we're personal managers. So we book people's personal appearances in places, primarily horror conventions, but signing shows. But we also book them in film school, stuff like that. We also will try to kick them up some work and steer it to their theatrical agents if we can find it. Right now, our clients, friends, people we work with include, of course, brother, Mr. William Forsythe, Billy Worth, Brooke McCarter, who were mentioned earlier when we were talking about Corey, Danielle Harris, Serena Vincent, most of the cast of the original Night of the Living Dead. Hello to my father, Zombie Number One, the Cemetery Ghoul, Bill Heinzman, my big sister, Kyra Sean, also known as Karen Cooper from the original Night of the Living Dead. John Russo, author of Night of the Living Dead, Russ Dreiner, Johnny from Night of the Living Dead, and George Cassana, the sheriff from Night of the Living Dead, some of our clients. Most of the cast of Day of the Dead, Joe Pilato, Gary Clark, Lori Cardill, Anthony DeLeo, Alex Vincent from Child's Play. The list just fluctuates and grows every day, but so many wonderful people. Oh, Diamond Dallas Page, another one of our clients, a great guy. had an awesome time with him at a show in Gettysburg a couple months ago. In fact, the weekend after JC's passing, I was blessed that we had Mr. Forsyth, DDP, Serena Vincent, who is the goddess and the most ultimate perfect woman to ever walk the face of the earth in every aspect, shape, and form. She's a lovely being of light, and that's why all you ladies should buy her how-to books like How to Eat Like a Hot Chick and stuff like that. We had Brooke, Billy, Serena, Forsyth, and DDP all booked at that Gettysburg show the week after JC passed, and I was sorely losing my mind and going through great grief, and they all really helped me. And I the night the show started, Billy Worth and Brooke McCarter went up to my room with me, and I said, "Look, I got to do this. I got to be able to do this." I'm like, "You guys didn't know my bro, you know. I got to do this." So we twisted one and poured a drink, and I put in a reel, you know, of all of JC and me's promos from this year and stuff like that, and then Brooke and Billy raised a toast to them losing Corey this year, and some of the obvious parallels with Corey and JC, you know, like the struggle and stuff like that. I mean, it was a pretty emotional moment and pretty heartfelt, and it was really cool because everywhere I went, man, for weeks and even now, I mean, just the other day I was some celebrities and we were talking about it, and they hoisted a toast to JC, and as long as I'm living, man, the legend of JC Bailey is going to live on forever, man, because, I can't say anything good about the brother. He humbled me and honored me so much, because I know from speaking with Joe, his dad, and his family members, I mean, you know, our friendship was real, and he really was like my bro and like a little brother and like a son and someone I was, and he was always so humble and so encouraging. And he just, what I found out, you know, after his passing and speaking with his dad and his other family members was, you know, the things that he was saying about me to them and how, what, you know, he held me in a really high position and like really respected me and really loved me and you know, said so many nice things about me to the people that were closest to him. And I'll never, you know, there's nothing I can say that can let you know how I feel about that, you know, because just the fact that, you know, despite any harshness or whatever, that I was blessed, man. I was blessed to, like, know JC. I was blessed to work with him. I was blessed to just be in his glow for a little while, man. I was blessed that he could turn to me and get real with me. And I mean, you know, and right up to, I mean, you know, to work with him, you know, his final show, TOD, and I mean, it kind of sucks that the way things were written, you know, the way we had to do things, that I had to step out, you know, I got murdered, and then I couldn't be with him. I mean, that was part of the thing, like, you know, JC, well, I'm lost without Billy Graham. Like, you can't even watch on the DVD if you look. When he's standing in the ring waiting for Scotty, you see him going, "Where's Billy? Where's Billy?" And you know, like, you know, how that affects me to look at that now is certainly very different than everybody that doesn't notice it.
Oh,
you know, because that was obviously part of the angle and the psychology of his character at that moment, but certainly has deeper implications now because, I mean, you know, I got to say this, man. When was he ever better? If there's one thing that can be said that's a positive, is that, man, you know, certainly a longer life would be a blessing and a great option, but I mean, you know, to go out on the top of your game is something that not many of us can hope to do in this lifetime. So it's through tragedy, but man, all you got to do is put in that TOD DVD from this summer and watch JC Bailey, people, and see him doing what he loves, doing it better than anybody in the business, and just, you know, just tremendous that day. I mean, it's wrestling and all that, man. Now I just kind of wish Scotty Vortex, man, you earned your thing, man. I just kind of wish now that, you know, JC could have won that
JC
day.
JC could have won it. No,
I'm sure Scotty probably feels the same way. You know what I mean? We all do.
Scotty could win it next year if JC could, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, no, I just, you know, but, you know, it's like blessing that I got to work two of the last three matches that he worked, but the fact that I didn't work that last one, you know, like just to be by his side out there, you know what I mean, and have that moment, I like, But then, you know, actually, you know, the last thing we did, we've talked about several times tonight, you know, the promo where I quit the company and everything. I mean, that's our last that's our last work together. And he was so good in that. You know, I saw haters talking shit on a poorly acted promo. Then how come so many people believed it if it was poorly acted? It's like, you know, these people that think a promo is supposed to be the exact WWE cadence of the traditional wrestling promo. It's like, fucking use your fucking imaginations, motherfucker. Like, I mean, to me, that promo with the fucking four of us seemed real. It seemed like real guys, like Billy Graham being the babbling spaz, and, you know, just everybody was so themselves in that promo, like the relationship and everything. I love that promo, you know, it just...
And I agree. You know, we obviously, you know, over here, we love JC, man. We did that tribute, and I hope that tribute did him some sort of justice. Hey, you know, I mean, nothing I could say could bring him back, man. So definitely rest in peace, JC, one more time. But, you know, I want to move on from that because I don't want to bring the whole thing down. I mean,
I'm gonna step outside, smoke a cigarette. I've got to make sure this fucking bearded Viking ain't trying to make time with one of Billy's angels here, man.
Yeah, man.
Dude, guess what? That don't take nothing. First of all, there ain't nothing to block, brother. You know what I mean? But anyway, go ahead, Jay. I'm sorry. I'm still on the radio. You guys know that, right? Okay, go ahead.
Of course. Yeah. And, you better loosen the girl up a little bit or something. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Make these false promises. But what we would really like over here, and we've done it with everybody.
Wait, Jay. You're throwing that at me?
Huh?
I'm not trying to make false promises. Was that at me?
Oh, yeah, that's about you. What?
Dude, I told you, I got another dude here now. How can I do that? What part don't you get?
You got the experience to deal with that.
No, he lives here too, man. What do you mean? Like, oh,
you got a pad. Send him up for the video game or something. But anyway, I'm just fucking with you, Billy.
I think we should do, just to, you know what they're doing? They're trying to egg me on that I'm not like Mr. fucking controversial, obscene enough. Like, wow, you've got a girl there and you won't do nothing like.
Oh, no. I didn't even bring that up. You was the motherfucker that was like,
right, I know
how about I do this on the radio? And I'm like, that's crazy. All right.
Yeah. But she's getting stage fright, man. She's getting stage fright.
I understand that. I wouldn't ask nobody to do that shit. You the pimp.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're the one talking that shit. I mean,
you don't like being pimp. So she just stuck her tongue out at me, man.
Right.
Oh,
exactly.
No, she said she wasn't sticking out at me. She was sticking out at you guys. That's what she just said.
Oh, man.
Okay,
right,
wait.
Then. Well, listen.
Oh, hey, wait.
Before we go there, we'll go back.
Wait. Come here 1 second, Mr. Shit Talker. Wait a minute, bro. Okay, wait a minute.
For me?
Like, okay, if I'm not at the point, you just agree with me. If I'm telling the truth, say yes. If I'm telling a lie, say he's a liar, okay, in front of my whole fan base everywhere, all 10 of them, okay? As soon as I'm done being polite and see, I didn't cancel this motherfucking interview for this beautiful lady here, okay? I fucking am stalling her.
I can wait.
She said she can wait, right? And you know why she can wait? Because once you go with the engine, where do you go from there, right? She's laughing. Okay, how about this? As soon as I get done with this shit about wrestling, I'm going to go downstairs in the shower with you. Yes or no?
Sure, absolutely.
You heard that, right? And we're
right,
going to,
not,
like,
no, I'm not, hey,
the boots, brother, okay? Like, all night long, okay? You get it? It's just like, it's not really, like I said, I don't do, like, shit with other guys present. It's just not my fucking thing, man. I'm sure he's glad I don't do things with other guys too. He doesn't want to see these balls.
Hey man, don't peg me wrong. You know, don't peg me wrong, homie.
I'm trying to say something. I'm trying to get you straight, bro. Okay, here's how it is, right? This lady has tread this sacred ground before. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. She came back for more. Am I correct?
Yeah.
You heard that, right? Okay. So
I don't got that. That doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm good.
And you know what? While you're hating on me, her breastises are pushing right up against me, so fuck you guys.
I don't doubt that, bro. I mean, that's
wow,
that's
man.
Good.
And my buddy just took pictures of me, like, kissing her and stuff. It's awesome. Come here.
You're a bearded lady, man. Back in the room. It's ridiculous. But anyway.
Oh, she just, like, she's performing. I can't believe it, man. The way you're all so wild everywhere else, man. I can't believe it. It's because you're in our home, right? You're being, like, civil. She wants me to get off the phone, so ask me the last couple questions. I'm getting off the phone because, you know what, I really do want some of her, okay? That's all there is to it. I've been waiting to see her for days and days, man.
All right, listen. What we do want, like I was saying before, you got into this whole, believe me, I'm fucking somebody. I believe you. Believe me, I believe you. But anyway, we got this out of a whole lot of other people, and all my wish list
always was... Wait, one second. Wait. Can I have a hit of the bowl while we're all out here, please? Okay, while I'm talking to Jay on the radio, please. Okay.
I guess I'll just do that shit. Why are you doing that shit?
There's not only been these awesome breasts, there's been these awesome buds, and I've been denying them for the sake of this stuff. I hope
I'll light up while you light up. Just, you know...
Wait a minute, can I say something? Hey, to the Black Tees, to Sabian. To Sabian, I want to say something. Seriously, Darnell, man. Big titties, bro. Big, big motherfucking titties and ass, bro. Okay? Seriously. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Jay. I'm sorry.
Nah, I'm in this ball. All right. Good. So, yeah, what I was saying is, you know, we got it out of a lot of people, and on my wish list was always, and I actually, two of the people that I had cut promos on here, I had to get a second take, including the Black G's that you just mentioned, because I want the best out of cats. You know what I mean? And I don't care what I got to do. We can do 2, 3, 8. But I want an official Billy Graham Cult Fiction promo for Yakuza Kick Radio.
Oh, right now?
Yeah.
Right this second? Like, just fly right into it? Okay,
yeah,
check this
right
out. Ready? Count me down. Count me down.
3, 2, 1.
Count me down.
3, 2, 1.
Listen, you bunch of idiots, know-nothings, haters, fans, lovers alike. You are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, J-Cat, Eric in the house, and you are now listening to the magnanimous, wonderful, soothing tones of the wonderful voice of Half-Breed, Billy Graham, the leader of Cult Fiction, the Mac, fighting the man since 1863, and, you know, bringing more women to your program than will ever listen to it ever again, because we all know I'm the Mac like that. Even my daughter says I've got the strong pimp hand, okay? So tune the fuck in. If you ever want to get laid in your life, you fucking idiots on the fucking internet, you should listen to me a lot more often, because then maybe you would have a relationship with a girl that you don't have to inflate first.
Yeah. Sorry, we got keeping with my
personal. Is that okay? Was that good? Did you like that? Here's another one.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yo,
Second one.
Listen, we're fighting each other now. Listen, ready? Yo, motherfuckers, you're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. This is Halfley Billy Graham, the leader of Cult Fiction, speaking for the international deathmatch superstar Masada, the ultra-violent Terminator Brain Damage, and my little doggy, 13. You better fucking come to Cage of Death, the most ultra-violent spectacle, the only wrestling event in the calendar year that if you miss it, you don't know your shit. You missed the whole real show. Okay, was that better?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And, yo, Sabian, man, cut a promo for these guys, bro. Come on, man.
Oh, they did. He did, man.
Okay. Well, there's no way I could do what he did.
He cut two, man. He cut a nice little, a PC promo, and then he cut a crazy Rate Your Girlfriend If You Don't Listen to Our Show promo.
Hey, and listen, man, another thing is, like, the whole shit we're talking about with my movie stuff and stuff like that, the more my shit gets rolling and the closer I get to directing all these wonderful screenplays I've written here and everything, and the more my stock goes up and the more my movie career takes off, I will tell you this right now. There's a lot of people in CZW that I plan to cast and stuff, and I'm going to start right there with fucking the Black Tees, okay? I think that the man is an incredibly underrated talent, the haters can fucking step off his fucking big black fucking dick because they can't even climb up on it, okay? Just honest to God truth, man. The guy reminds me of, he reminds me of fucking Bruce Lee, man. Like, the man can say more with one little subtle expression on his face. I mean, like, guy is an actor waiting to happen, waiting to fucking bust out. There's several people in that company, man. I could say good things about Drew Gulak, man. I think he's got a, he's definitely going to get some opportunities in film as time passes. I mean, there's just a bunch of them. I mean, Ruckus is dedicated to it. Robbie's got the talent. I mean, I'll tell you what, Robert Anthony, the former Egotistico Fantastico, man, loving, loving Friday Night with Robert Anthony. Man's a wonderful talent, also has aspirations in the film business, and I've been enjoying Friday Nights with Ego, and also would like to say, hey, man, cool thing wearing that Cult Fiction shirt, man. I liked it.
Yeah, right, right. Everybody's questioning that shit. Oh, well, what is that about? Like,
well, who knows? Who knows? Maybe I'm just not telling yet. You know what I mean? Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah,
maybe Mr.
Yeah.
Anthony is an unlikely candidate, but remember, man, the one thing that's the benchmark, everybody thinks you got to be a deathmatch worker to work with Cult Fiction, but really what the benchmark of Cult Fiction is fucking dedication, honesty, fucking being a real bro, man, and Robert Anthony, man, excuse me, okay, fucking, I'll tell you what, Vince, man, you should have already taken fucking Sabian, you should have already taken fucking Robert Anthony already. I mean, that's two guys I can say right off the bat.
You got a chance at this guy.
And I'll tell you what, that Adam Cole's going there too, man, if he's got any fucking brains, man. That's the God truth, you know what I mean? And
so other than that, who else do you think is next to go? I mean, you mentioned a few names before. I mean, one of the first names that come to my mind is Young Buck, definitely Young Buck, but you had mentioned him before, and, you know, see if you come up with him. Throw a couple names.
No, just tell me. I'm bad at guessing.
Oh, Sammy Callahan.
Oh, Sammy Callahan. I've already said what I think of Sammy earlier. I mean, I love Sammy. Hey, man, Sammy and Joe, both also aspiring film guys. Ruckus. I mean, we've got a lot of love, you know, in CZW for film. Maven, great actor, man. If I had $1 million budget to make something tomorrow morning, those guys would all be cast right next to these other actors that I work with.
Like WWE-wise, of course, we know our aspirations and our hopes for, you know, WWE to turn wise to what is actually entertaining and what is good to us. But obviously, it's going to happen, and maybe it will. Maybe we can turn the corner and we can get Cult Fiction up into, you know, WWE.
I mean, look, honestly, the chances of, you know what, I could tell you this right now. I mean, if there was a place for us to go other than to Japan or to Germany, where props to everybody that did the CZW Germany tour. I really wish I could have been there, man. I wish I could have come over, because, you know, Cult Fiction has mad fan support in Germany, and I really want
to
get over and meet all the people over there. What I was going to say, man, is other than doing things like that, I mean, really, what's the realisticness of us being in the WWE? Well, obviously not much, right? On the fact that, like, you know, I'm a smart guy, I'm a professional guy behind the scenes, but I am more important to me and shit don't go with that. But, however, really, honest to God, like, I don't know, man. I think that the direction TNA is going these days and stuff like that, if you couldn't see Masada and Brain Damage and me lending something there, I think you're crazy, because I think we would. I think absolutely. And Masada's more for
TNA
me.
Is thinking shit, though.
I'm just saying, man. I think, yeah, but you know what, you do? You want to go somewhere where your talents will be put to use and you'll help people, you know? And I think that, man, if they kind of latched on to, like, you know, instead of trying, and it's no offense to all the legends, I love them all, man, but I mean, if you started spending your money on some young talent, some of the guys we were talking about, just every one of those guys could go work for TNA and improve their product to me, you know, and, the bottom line is, other than, either one of those companies would do well hiring me or fucking Robbie Moreno, because they need to bring back fucking managers, man. I mean, this is like...
Right, of course. And
you know, but I just really think TNA would provide.
I think it does need to be bring back.
Yeah. I just think that TNA would be a place where, if the mind frame was right, that cult fiction actually could be something that would work, you know. But it's a big mountain to climb. Like I said, Masada has worked for him before. We've got a lot of friends that have worked there before. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but the probability is lower. But the other part of the probability depends on, you know, what's the arrangement, what's the money, because, you know, certainly there's more of a demand on your time and your obligations, but is it really going to lead to more a permanent financial stability? Well, I know a lot of things. So, like, unless your name is fucking Hulk Hogan or, you know, Eric Bischoff, I don't know that, you know, somebody from CZW getting signed to fucking TNA is going to mean that they're, you know, financially set and now they've got, you know, a nest egg, because that's just not the reality of what they're working with as compared to the WWE. You know, I mean, WWE, what happens,
right,
shit gets to people's head, they live beyond their means, they spend their money, they fuck up, and then they're crying 10 years later, oh, I'm still the guy. Well, look, man, you get your money, you get your deal, man. It's like Lanny Poffo says, man, like, be smart, man, save your money, invest, you know, like, you can get out like Tito or Lanny or any of these guys that were really smart and they made a really nice life for themselves off the opportunity they were given. They got all these other guys, man, they're going to be 70 years old and they're going to still have to be forced to go out there and kind of embarrass themselves and get by on, you know, being a used to be. And it's sad, it's hard, but it's because they never learned to, you know, to take what they had at that moment and realize there was going to be an end to it. There's always going to be an end to everything.
Yeah.
We're talking about life and death all night. Well, it's just like, I mean, man, I couldn't believe I ever even got into CZW. You know what I mean? With all the people, the thousands of people that would like to have those spots, everything that comes from the person and letting me live out some of my fantasies and everything in my dream after everything I went through. But, I mean, to me, I don't even want to consider in my mind the idea of, like, CZW not being part of my life. I just, I could cut a multi-picture deal with a major film studio tomorrow, and my time could be, and I could be all over fucking goddamn Entertainment Tonight and whatever, and I'd be in this big movie from Dimension or Lionsgate or whatever, and I'll tell you, I'd still make time for CZW. I would. And that's another reason I could never see me going to Vince, as opposed to TNA, where you're still allowed to work for other companies. You know, you got no offense, man. Like, but you know, when a certain CZW announcer, you know, had to inform us a couple years ago that he wasn't going to be with us anymore because he got a job with the WWE, I was fully expecting to see my friend pop up on television. And it's 5 years later, he's got a great job, but he's not an on-camera personality. And the point, I can understand the point of them not letting their on-camera personalities appear in indies, but if someone works in an office in a tech position, I don't understand why he's not allowed to come and be a ring announcer. And thank God we found somebody that was great, you know, to fill that spot. Because, well, hey, I love both guys, man. I love, I'm not going to say first bro's name because I don't want to get him in no shit over there at the glass tower. I'm going to knockdown soon with my monsters, but
I guess I'll keep it quiet.
Hey, mad props to Larry the Legend, man. Fuck everybody else, man. Like, another guy I think whose talents are a lot more than are apparent on the surface, and I'd like to see him get a lot more material and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like
definitely
to see him get a lot more.
Unbelievable. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I got to wrap this up now. I got, like, give me a couple real quick, and I got to wrap it up, man. I... All
right, Eric, yo.
What's that?
Yeah, Eric. I'm good. I'm good, brother.
Oh, you're good. You've been quiet all night. You like that promo, though, right, Eric?
Yep, I'm good.
So how'd you like it? Wait, you know what we should call attention to? Man, Eric joining the cult is something that we should acknowledge. You know what I mean? Like, I've noticed him, you know, flying the colors. I appreciate it. How's it feel to step up in the world, Eric? You know what I mean?
It's awesome.
How's it feel to roll with the real crew? You know what I mean?
It's awesome.
All right. I would like to give Billy this opportunity to promote whatever he'd like to promote. I know he's got a lot on his plate, and he said a lot already, but if you do have anything you'd like to plug, the mic is yours, man.
Well, okay. I'm going to wrap this up. Yo, guys, check this out. Yeah, hey, excuse me. I'm about to wrap this up, and they said I can promote and plug anything that I want to promote and plug, okay? I would first like to promote and plug beyond and above all things. Cage of Death, CZW, it's our WrestleMania. Come, that's going to be the biggest fucking thing in your life. You heard that? Hey, Johnny, the Viking has been there before, and he had a fucking blast. He loves it, okay? That's the first thing I'd like to promote. The second thing I would like to promote is thanking you guys and Yakuza Kick Radio for what you've been doing, man, for helping all of us guys on the Indies. The third thing I'd like to do is thank my family, my brother John here, my brother Rob Lucas, for saving me at my darkest hour and providing this new home for me. And the fourth thing I would like to promote is ending this motherfucking interview and getting Billy Graham balls deep in this beautiful woman that's here, okay?
Why you gotta treat us like a nuisance last minute, homie? I mean, come on.
I mean, she's...
I'm all for you getting you, but, you know, come on. We gotta be a nuisance. All right.
No,
so,
look, yeah, we started at 8 o'clock. It's fucking 11, okay?
I got you, bro, all the way from
the city to see me.
I know.
I love you guys, and you know I'll come back on anytime.
Because my belly deserves it. You know what I mean? My belly deserves it. So.
Yo, he just said
but,
Billy does deserve to be allowed to. Thank you, bro. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So listen,
okay.
We Yakuza Kick Radio, of course, me, Jay Cat, you know, holler at me anytime. And
mad love to everybody in the combat zone, man. All you guys, man, as usual. I can never do everything right, and I always seem to fucking give someone a bone to pick with me or step on somebody's dick nerves. I'm just being myself, guys, girls, and I didn't mean to piss anybody off tonight. I'm just talking straight with people, man, and, you know, whatever, man. So if you're mad at me, you know, nothing is new, and if I entertained you good, and if you think I should be, you know, burned at the stake, fucking bring a lot of fucking torches and a lot of tar, all right?
Yeah, man, definitely. You know, CZW is the shit, and Cult Fiction is not going to die. It's you're not a fan, you know what I mean? You're a member, and it's not for life. It's to the death.
It's to the motherfucking death, and you know what else? It's beyond the fucking grave, man. Long live J.C. Bailey.
Absolutely.
Props to Trent Acid, man. Everybody that passed this year, we love you all, man. And finally, man, best wishes to Joe Bailey and the rest. Kim, J.C.'s sister, man, in your time of sadness, man. And I'll talk to you all later, man. So I'll see you all in your
nightmares.
Yeah,
Bailey, we'll see you in December.
I will see you all in your nightmares and in a porno coming to your theater soon, okay? coming to the adult bookstore. It's called Billy Does Wouldn't You Like to Know Her Name?
Right. Hey, what is her name? Because
Nanya.
Jesus Christ, I mean, you've been talking about this.
Her name is Nanya. She's
okay.
Russian.
Okay.
Nanya
well,
business.
You know.
Nanya business,
right?
But, you know, actually, you might meet her because I invited her to accompany to Cage of Death. So... Yes, you are.
Okay, well, then maybe you'll tell me your name then.
This guy is a good friend of mine. He's not some. He's, yeah.
Nah,
what'd you say, Jack?
It's all good, Billy. I just put a name on it
because I embarrassed her on the radio. No,
I know that's terrible. So you better come.
Listen, you're stepping on my material. I said she said she's not coming, and I said yes, you are coming, just not on the radio. Okay. Let's stick with this, okay?
My bad, yeah. I was about to follow up with that and said, hey, you know, you better come and let Billy handle that. So, you know, we'll check you later, man. Show that girl a good time.
When's this airing?
This is airing next Thursday. Tomorrow we're airing Justice Payne.
Next Thursday.
And you're airing, yes.
Okay. All right, brother. Listen, I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Thank you, homie.
All right. I love
you guys.
Talk
to you later, man.
Peace,
and this is great.
DZ fucking
Peace.
W. Cult Fiction to the death.
Yes. To the death, motherfuckers, and that's what it is, man. So, all right, Eric. Let's wrap this up. That's it.